United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credit.
Kim Baker resigned.
Let's go! Speaking of early, how about that Cro-Magnon Marty Dry with Thank You Marty for Silky Smooth Sound, make me sound like Peggy Lee, Freddie and the Dreamers.
Wrong speed. We've got it on the wrong speed. For those of you who are recovering from a hangover, that's going to sound just right.
Let's pull it right back down again. Let's try it a little faster. See if that picks it up a little bit. Let's get up on 17. Those pilots are going right now. I really like the music. Oh, still a bad song.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's try something.
Let's play this backwards and see if it gets any better.
Look, there's Nevis. Freddy is the devil. Look, there's Nevis. Freddy is the devil.
Hi, can you help me? What's your name?
My name's Roosevelt Lee Roosevelt.
Roosevelt, what town are you stationed in? I'm stationed in Poontang.
Well, thank you, Roosevelt. What's the weather like out there?
It's hot. Damn hot. Real hot. Hot in this is my shorts. I can cook things in it. Little crotch pot cooking.
Well, can you tell me what it feels like?
Fool, what is hot? I told you again. Were you born on the sun? It's damn hot. You can be a little thing. I saw it so damn hot. I saw one of those little guys in the orange robe burst into flames. It's that hot. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, what do you think it's going to be like tonight?
It's going to be hot and wet. That's nice if you're with a lady, but it ain't no good if you're in the jungle.
Thank you, Roosevelt. Here's a song coming your way right now. Nowhere to Run To by Martha and the Vandellas. Yes! Hey, you know what I mean.
AFBN, rocking you from the Delta to the DMZ.
AFBN, better than AFBD, which means you have to get a quick shot. We're moving on right now. Here's a riddle for you. What's the difference between the Army and the Cub Scouts? Cub Scouts don't have heavy artillery.
Hey, I'm Adrian Cronauer. I'm only getting 1,600. Why? Because I have to. It's the Army.
Talking out the field today. Hi, what's your name?
My name's Bob Fiver.
Bob, what do you do?
I'm in artillery.
Thank you, Bob. Can we play anything for you?
Anything. Just play it loud, okay?
No. I've meant nothing to you. I just came from Crete with women that look like Zorba.
Woo. Thank you.
Those girls are just so pretty. Gomer, are you here in Vietnam? Yes, I am. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Linda, why did you name your daughter
Linda Bird? Because Linda Dog would be too cruel.
Ah, easy, girl.
Easy. You know, if you pick them up by their ears, it doesn't hurt them as much. Oh, you're going straight to hell for that one. Watch out over there.
Here's an incredible coincidence. Ho Chi Minh, Colonel Sanders, actually the same person.
You be the judge. Our lines are open. Something real special right now. We've got our traffic report up there on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. How's it going up there?
Adrian, it's not going exactly well. There's a water buffalo jackknife up there. It's not a very pretty picture. There's horns everywhere. I don't know what to say. We're going to maybe drop in a little napalm there and try and cook him down. Maybe a little barbecue.
We've got a special man in the audience today right now. It's Mr. Leo.
He's a fashion consultant for the Army.
Well, thank you, Adrian. I'm just very happy to be here. I want to tell you something. You know, this whole camouflage thing for me doesn't work very well.
Why is that?
Well, because you go in the jungle, I can't see you. You know, it's like wearing stripes and plaid. It's for me, I want to do something different. You know, you go in the jungle, make a statement if you're going to fight, clash. You know what I mean?
Thank you for that lovely tune. That funky music will drive us till the dawn. Let's go, let's boogaloo till we puke.
That's about it for the Adrian Cronauer. I'm going to take myself out of the driver's seat, but I'm going to turn you over right now to Mr. Excitement, a man with limp, damaged hair, but nevertheless a fireball, Dan Levitan.
And welcome. Welcome to Tracy and Friends in the Morning. It's Sticks here in the air chair, and Mark's standing by with me here, Mark Mangi.
Hey, Sticks. How you
hey,
doing?
Hey, good. And our number is 347-945-5229. Call in and talk to us. We just played that in honor of Mr. Robin Williams, who passed away yesterday. Those of us of my age remember him as Mork from Ork, is his start. And he
Nano.
He grew up in his comedy with us, and he gave us a lot of laughs, and he touched a lot of our lives. He really did. Mark, we were sitting here watching the video while that was playing, and you couldn't help but laugh. I mean, he was just an amazing comedic genius, and he will be missed.
Yeah, he's certainly one of my favorite actors, one of my favorite comedians. Yeah, you know, it's a shame when you see people with that kind of talent, and there's been, you know, in our lifetime, Stixers, there's been way too many of them that have decided to leave us early, either intentionally or unintentionally, and the talent just, you know, I have a hard time with that. I mean,
can you imagine what Belushi or Farley would be doing today?
Oh, sure.
I mean, Belushi was just amazing.
And in the music industry, you've got Michael Jackson, and for those that are my age, I was listening to Janis Joplin on my list of tunes the other day, and she is just as Amy Winehouse, another one. What great talents! I don't get it. They got everything to live for, and they either overdose or they kill themselves, and that is just
it's I don't know. A lot of times they claim great talent comes with great torture.
Yeah, I tried to kill myself this morning. You can see the Band-Aid on my neck.
Yeah,
it didn't
I see that.
Work. It didn't go deep enough.
Hey, Six.
Is that you, Eric? Yeah.
Yeah,
go
it's
ahead.
Me, man. How you doing? Hey, Mark,
I'm doing great.
Good. How are you?
Yeah,
today?
Me and my dog. Remember the movie Jumanji? It was a kid's movie he played in? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Me and my daughter watched that last night.
I didn't see that movie, but I hear it was pretty good.
Yeah, when we were kids, we watched that movie probably 100 times, but when we both heard, we just both felt the need to put it in the machine, and we watched it again. we laughed like we did when she was a kid.
And the thing about Robin Williams was he could do almost anything. There was a movie, and I can't remember the title of it, and it's kind of, looking on the situation now, it was a dark movie, and it was about a family. The children had been killed in a car accident, and then the father got killed in a car accident, and the mother committed suicide. And they were in heaven, the children and the father, and they were trying to get the mother out of, I guess you could call it, purgatory. And it was one of those, it must not have sold well because it was one of those Saturday afternoon movies. And in light of this tragedy, I remembered seeing that. I don't know if anybody else has seen that movie and can come up with the...
I saw that movie.
That you, Ms. Diva?
Yeah, hold on. Let me get the... Because he played in it with Cuba Gooding Jr. Cuba Gooding Jr. was the one who was taking him, who was guiding him in his walk and trying to get the mother back.
Right. Yeah, he was actually his son, I believe. The son and the daughter, actually, but they were in other forms.
Yeah. I just loved every movie he was in, Good Morning Vietnam, Dead Poets Society, Good Will Hunting. Let's see, I think it's called Awakening.
Night at the Museum.
Night at the Museum was hilarious.
Yeah, that was really good.
I mean, and he could support as well as star. That was the neat thing about it. A lot of these actors, once they become lead actors, they have a hard time going back to being in supporting roles.
I like The Birdcage, which is one of my favorite movies. I think I've seen it maybe 100 times.
I haven't seen that. What was the plot?
That was hilarious.
You know, two gay guys that live together with
their son.
The son decides to marry the daughter of a right-wing senator activist, and they just what happens is they try to hide the fact that the two guys they were. That the father of the Robin Williams and his partner were gay, and Christine Baranski played the mother from A One Night Stand. It was a pretty good movie. It's a funny movie.
What's the name of the movie where he was in Russia? He was trying to defect.
Oh yeah. Oh. Well, no, New York.
Hudson.
Moscow on the Hudson.
Moscow on the Hudson.
Have a wonderful McDay.
And I hear them say on the radio they got. He still has four movies that'll be coming out. Wow.
I just realized something.
What's that?
Tracy has never taught me how to pick up a local call, and I see the thing flashing, and I'm afraid to touch a button because I
don't
know what happened.
Touch it and see what happens.
Well, it's not flashing anymore, so they must have given up. So maybe they'll try. It's probably Steve.
What dreams may come.
What was that?
That's the movie. What Dreams May Come. That's the movie you were looking for. You're thinking of what dreams may come.
Okay.
How could Tracy not teach you how to pick up a local call?
There are just sometimes, It probably never came in when she was over here coaching me.
So, you know, if the audience, if it's a local audience that's listening here today and we don't pick up the phone, it's because we don't know how to pick up the phone.
That's right. So,
you know, the
so,
boss goes off and is having fun up in Cleveland today.
Yeah, yeah, and, we're going to let the cat out of the bag.
Here, the, you know.
The boss and Jeff are at Cleveland Browns training camp today, rubbing elbows with the big shot.
Oh, they didn't tell me, huh? Okay.
I noticed
she
wasn't invited with them.
Right. Well, she told me the next time she gets a NASCAR thing. Jeffrey!
Hey, just push the flashing green button. You'll come right up.
All right. How do I hang up on them then?
Push the red button and then push the button to the left.
Push the off button?
Yeah, after you're done with them.
That's how I hang up on them is I push the off button. All right, I'll remember that. The local caller will try it. All right. So are you guys up there yet?
No. The bus driver was a little late getting there. He was in, okay. We were supposed to be at the shops at Boardman Park. He ended up going to the Boardman Park. That was a good one. I am mourning the death of Robin Williams. I thought he was crazy as he could be, but he was a good person. And by all reports that I've ever heard, and just sorry that he was so troubled. And you know, depression is as much chemical as it is psychological. And when that happens, it's something very hard to deal with. And I've known a lot of people that suffered depression, you know, and we got some things together for them. But, you know, some people you lose. And so far, we lost this one.
Well, you've been around some very talented people throughout your life, Jeff. Is there a lot of truth to that saying that with great talent usually comes great stuff?
Pain.
Great trouble. Pain. Yes. Yeah.
In many different ways. But
I believe it's the gifting. I believe it's more of a gifting because it's not even in it. You have more who are not on the celebrity level that commit suicide than do. And then when you look back on their lives, you see that there was something inside of them. There was a gifting that was inside of them that they just could not handle. And a lot of people who are very sensitive to the surroundings, to everything that's going around them, they can't handle it. And sometimes they either refuse help or they can't get the help that they need.
Hey, Jeff, we're getting a ton of background noise on your line. I just muted you, so we'll bring you up again in a couple of minutes. Eric, what were you about to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that, some people, they say when depression is like, the way it works is like, it's just when you're down, you're down. I mean, someone can tell you your house burnt to the ground, then they can turn around and tell you you won $1 million, and it's like you react the same way, you know?
I was diagnosed with bipolar disease for many years, and it was a misdiagnosis, which is why the medicine never worked. It turned out to be a food allergy to chocolate. I have to watch chocolate because of the chemicals that are in chocolate, and the problem went away. It just took umpteen doctors to figure it out. But when it is, you know, the sinking feeling is just painful. It's unbearable. And it's nothing like people who have. It's more than just feeling bad. It is just you want to crawl into a hole and die. And bipolar disease or clinical depression is something that I think we need to pay more attention to.
All right, we're going to be going to break now, so we'll be right back.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming.
I was going to say, why don't we keep the mics open?
Yeah.
It's bigger than just wanting to crawl into a hole and die, because there are a lot of people who suffer from depression who get those feelings. It's when they get to the part where they're feeling hopeless, that there's nothing that they can do to shake it. There's nothing that they can do to get out of it. There's nothing they can do. They can't see the future anymore, and they can't see themselves being good in the future. And they don't look at it as a selfish act, but in a way it is. But the way it is they're thinking they're doing better. They're doing it for the good of the people that they love. Because they're suffering, the people around them is suffering. And I'm curious as to why Mark's chocolate allergy caused him to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I wonder what type of symptoms he was having.
Yeah. It's like one thing about depression is, tragically, it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care about color. It doesn't care how much money you have. It doesn't care.
No. But the tragedy is, though, is, if you have the money, you have the ability to get the help that you need. Psychotherapy and psychotropic drugs are a big help. The only thing is you have to have a strong support group, and sometimes people have to be stronger than the sick person. And I tell this to the people that I deal with and help with all the time, because I myself suffered through depression since I was a little girl. Because of traumatic events that happened in my life, and I was finally diagnosed in 2003 with bipolar disorder. And you have to have people around you who are going to not say yes. Because when somebody is in that mindset, that frame of mind, they think they know better. But you have to have someone who is going to override anything that you say or want to do. Robin Williams, his family knew that he was in a depressive state. And sometimes a person who's in a depressive state, when they get to that point, they know how to fool and trick the ones around them into thinking they're okay. But you have to pay closer attention when you know that somebody is suffering or dealing with that and been dealing with it for a longer time, because then you'll see the smaller signs. You'll see the withdrawal. You'll see the sadness behind the smile. You'll see the sadness in the eyes, even though they want you to think that they're happy. And in that case, that's when it takes a stronger person to move in and say, no, you're not okay. We're going to do something about it. Unfortunately, you don't have people willing to step in and take that role because they think that they're hurting their loved ones by going against their wishes. Instead, they would be helping them. And that's why I started... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that back in the mid-90s, I kind of went through that too because I lost my best friend. We were both riding buddies with motorcycles, and he got killed on his bike on his way home from work one night. And it was hard. My wife was pregnant with my daughter at the time. She was born a month later. But that month before she was born, I was in a slump. I would just sit in the garage and just stare at my motorcycle like, man, you know, I want to ride, but
And this is why it's easier to get on this for people to get on disability for mental illness than it is for physical disability, because when your mind is gone, you can't function. You cannot. When you're in a depressive state, schizophrenic state, a manic state, you cannot function in society. You may be able to go along, but certain people just cannot function. And when you're going through depression, it's like your mind just shuts down. And it's like you can't control it because it's a chemical imbalance. It's not your fault. It's nothing that you're doing. If you don't mind me asking, how did you come out of that? Like, what helped you through it?
To be honest, Diva, when I held my daughter in my arms, this bright light just came over me like, get over it, man. You got to live for her now. You know, I know that doesn't work for everybody, but it worked for me.
It worked for, I normally don't talk about this, but I know I need to start talking about it more because I know my story will help other people, but it's the stigma attached to it because the moment I get upset or whatever, people are like, oh, you're just crazy. But I used to suffer from depression, and I tried to commit suicide 8 different times. From the time I was 13, the last time I tried was I was 23. What caused me to wake up and realize that I was needed here on this earth was my daughter. and having and feeling the need that I needed to take care of her. And she was born in 2000, and I never thought that I would get to that point again after she was born, but it was that last attempt and her being there and
It's just the way she looked at me. You know, it's like she opened her eyes. I know they say babies newborn, they can't really see, but it's like she opened her eyes and her eyes met. It's just like she wanted to say daddy, and I was just like, okay, you know, this is a new chapter in my life, and I got to get over this and stand up. Hello?
My nonprofit, I come across so many people, and it's just heart-wrenching. You'd be surprised who is dealing and suffering from mental illness and suffered all their lives. And it's usually starts with some type of traumatic event, or it's passed on through genetics, and then a traumatic event triggers it, but it's just sad. I mean, when I heard about Robin Williams, my heart broke. Anytime I hear about somebody committing suicide, my heart breaks, because I'm like, it's different when you get to that point where you want to take your own life.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't cry when my grandparents died. I didn't cry after funerals, didn't cry after the funerals, before them. And I didn't cry at his funeral. But about a week afterwards, it just hit me like a freight train. I mean, I would hear songs would set me off. You know, smells would set me off, and I would just break down.
I know.
But I did, like you
said.
Like you said, I would just, I knew, I put up a front, kind of, you know, so nobody would really notice.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you do, because, well, one, in the black community, it's a stigma. And then, two, it's like, well, you just get over it, or you just got to, you know, but people don't understand, you have to work out the process yourself, and there's other things that can help, but just simply saying, you got to get over it, especially when you lose someone. I mean, I can't even imagine. I can't tell you how many countless people I lost over the first time experiencing death was with my cousin. She was more like an aunt. She was my mother's age. Last time I seen her was Halloween night. We went trick-or-treating, and we ended up at her house. She was my protector. I was a sensitive child. And no one understood me, and I was always misunderstood, but for some reason, she always understood me, and she protected me from everyone else, including my mother.
Yeah, I was born in March of 72, he was born in October of 72, and we live right next door to each other, you know, so we were like brothers.
Unfortunately, my cousin killed herself when she was 25, and I didn't know that till decades later. That she committed suicide. They tried to keep it from us. But I remember telling my mom, I was like, why? Well, when she first tried it the first time, why didn't y'all get help? Oh, she was just crying. You know, she told us she was just joking. I was like, when someone tries to commit suicide, they're not joking. It's a cry for help. Even if they don't mean to try to really kill themselves, they're crying out for help. And unfortunately, she died 2 days after the last time I saw her, and I had a hard time dealing with that for years. I didn't let go of that until after 2004. I remember when I got pregnant with my daughter, I went through a state of depression because she was not there to see her born, come back. What is wrong? Okay, sticks been on break for 10 minutes.
I know. Now, what are they doing? What are they doing?
He messed up at the station. You don't even hear Jeff. You don't hear nobody else online. You just hear us having a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Remember that song from Tupac, How Long Will They Mourn Me?
Yeah.
I couldn't, for years, I could not listen to that song without breaking down.
I mean, my mom couldn't listen to Keith Sweat for years, for decades. We weren't allowed to play Keith Sweat in the house. because you're just so devastated by her death.
Yeah.
And
that was one of his, that was one of his favorite songs. So it was like, you know, every time, and then that's how I felt too, you know. I'm mourning you, bro.
Yeah, and then after she died, my uncle died from cancer. Then after he died, my grandfather was murdered. Then after he was murdered, my last uncle was murdered. Then after he was murdered, I had a cousin that I was very close to who was murdered. And death is a very sad thing, but their death didn't impact me like her death did, because I understood the place that she was at when she committed suicide, because I've been there. And I can understand where her mind was, and I'm like, dang, if only somebody would have really took her seriously and reached out and would have saw through her false happiness that she was truly unhappy.
Yeah, I know. It was hard for me, too, because I couldn't say goodbye because his injuries were so bad that they had to have a closed casket. I mean, his face was that messed up that no one could, you couldn't handle it. So basically, it was just casket with a picture of him on the top of it, and I'm like, and this was hard to believe, you know? It's like,
yeah. But the biggest thing that I hope everybody get out of this, and I keep saying this over and over again, is that there are no resources in treating mental illness. In the state of Ohio, it's very, very difficult to get in to see a psychiatrist because we barely have any, because their insurance rates are so sky high, which I don't understand. Because it's not like they get sued for medical malpractice a lot.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
I used to work for a psychiatrist. I used to work as his office manager, and barely could find a psychiatrist. So the waiting list to see a psychiatrist to get your meds, regular medical doctors are not willing to treat anything more than depression. And then to get in to see a psychologist is even tough, depending on what type of insurance you have. You have private insurance, you good. You can get some type of psychotherapy, but being on some type of government assistance, no. It's very, very hard. And the governor expanded Medicaid, but yet you can't get it. You can't get the help you need. These people can't get the help they need.
Yeah,
no, I did hear Mark.
I'll tell you, I heard something, too.
I don't think they know what they're doing.
You know, it's on the one hand, you know, we talk about, or leaders talk about mental illness and trying to address the issues. But on the other hand, you know, you can't address mental illness because the people that have mental illness have a definite right not to be treated. And therefore, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. You know they have issues. You want to treat them, but if they refuse treatment, there's nothing you can do about it.
But see, that's the falseness where we believe in their civil liberties, and I believe in free will and choice. But at some point, that's just like, okay, with our children. At some point with our children, we will definitely cut off their free will and say no. Why can't we do the same with our loved ones, even if they're adults? It makes no sense that because we are so caught up in individual rights and civil liberties for adults, that we will let our loved ones suffer in pain for that reason. They don't want to be forced into the hospital. They don't want to be forced to take their medication. But guess what? Someone who is suffering from a manic phase can be harmful and detrimental to themselves and to the people surrounding them. Will they become murderous? No. Schizophrenics, detrimental to themselves, to the people around them. Sometimes they can become very, very dangerous. Somebody suffering from deep clinical depression and paranoia, they can be a danger to themselves and a danger to everyone else. But yet we see this and we say, oh, because of their civil rights, we can't force them to do anything. But no, your civil rights does not end. I mean, does not begin and mine's end.
Well, and that's the problem. I mean, you weren't old enough, but I remember it back in 73 when they emptied Bellevue Hospital in New York, and every person that was, you know, mentally ill and needed to stay there, they released them. They had to release them. They didn't have any choice. The New York State Supreme Court said they had to release those people. So what happened? They wound up on the street, and they became homeless people.
Well, because the thing about it is how they were doing it back then, they weren't implementing it safely. They didn't know how to treat mental illness back then. The shock therapy, the treatments they were using back then were horrible, and they were and it was inhumane.
Yeah. They're on the radio.
Yeah, they don't
know
what they're doing. And
I got the radio on right now in the garage, and I can hear them.
But yet they can't hear us in the chat.
Let me text them.
Well, we've been having a full Black Flags conversation for like 20 minutes now without them.
He's got me turned on. If he hadn't turned me on, I couldn't hear you guys.
I think he knows what he's doing. But how they treat mental illness now in the facilities they have now, we need more of. It's not like it used to be back in the day. Shock therapy doesn't work. I mean, the treatments they were using back in the day was horrible. It was inhumane. Now we find out psychotherapy along with psychotropic drugs work. And sometimes a person has to be hospitalized. And in the hospital, they're going to get the psychotherapy. They're going to be forced to take their medication. But it's not like it used to be back in the day. I know because I used to be hospitalized several times.
Yeah, I could never understand that shock therapy. I mean, how does I understand how electrocuting you is going to make you better? I never could understand that.
Because it's a chemical imbalance. You don't have your neurons are misfiring. Synapses are not firing like they should. So they figure they can shock them into straightening your brain out, really. Getting them to fire up. But that didn't work.
I just sent a message. We are having a separate convo on Blog Talk. Care to join us? LOL. Pull us up. I don't know if they'll bring us up or not. But I heard them on iHeart. I mean, it took a minute for them to come up on iHeart.
Heard in a long, long, long time, and
all right,
just
there you
absolutely
go.
Terrific. And you know, boom, she's gone with drugs. I still listen to her
music. Dog and, with Diva and with Diva and Eric.
Yeah, welcome. Well, sorry about that, guys. We had a rookie mistake here. I got South Carolina calling me. I got Jeff calling me. So I apologize to my Blog Talk audience. And we've got 5 seconds, and we're going to break. I'm so sorry.
We'll be back.
We'll be back.
Remember to bring us back. Oh, my God. Where is Tracy? Why is not Jeff in the studio?
Oh, boy. Did you guys just hear Mark was talking about Gracie Allen? Steve, you wouldn't remember. I don't know if Eric, you remember who Gracie Allen is?
I've heard of the name.
That's,
who the heck is Gracie Allen?
Gracie Allen? You remember George Burns?
From?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
George Burns?
Yeah.
His wife.
Okay.
They're back from vaudeville in the old vaudevillian days and radio and early TV and all that good stuff.
Okay, what was he mentioning her for?
No, I was saying Mark was talking about it on the radio.
Yeah, I was wondering, what was he talking about it for?
Oh, no, no, he remembers her on the radio. That's all he was
saying. Oh, he was just having a one of those moments. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know that Robin Williams and John Belushi were real good friends, and they partied hard together. I learned that last night.
Him and Belushi? Wow.
Yeah, that's yeah.
That's kind of eerie, man.
Yeah, when Belushi overdosed, that's when he decided that enough's enough. You know, he got married, and, you know, he had a couple kids. He kind of went cold turkey for a long time, and then he kind of just been battling all those years.
Well, that's usually what leads to somebody mental illness. People tend to self-treat with drugs and alcohol. And we just look at them as drug addicts and alcoholics. But usually when you see someone at that state, it's usually they're using it to battle something else.
Oh, I've seen several folks that have had to come off of the psychotropic drugs. The ones that they use to help you cope. It's a trip, man. And sometimes they don't come off because withdrawal is worse than taking it. And you see them, they go into shakes and cramps and now they said one guy said it feels like little bugs crawling up your veins, and it's crazy. So, but I don't know. But Miss Diva, tell me something now. I've been seeing when you talking about, I hurt. But then I see you out in a dress that probably could stop you from breathing.
What? The white dress?
No, you
the
had
white
on
dress?
Oh, there's another one.
No. Okay, you got which picture?
It was one you posted up here recently with you and your daughter, with your new friend.
What?
With your cane.
Oh, Mr. McGriff.
Hello, everybody, and we are back.
I didn't have on a dress. And,
I got my clock screwed up again, so I apologize again. We got our second rookie mistake of the day. Tracy and friends, WSOM 600 AM.
Tracy assured me you knew how to do this, Dave.
I do.
I don't know what buttons to push.
It's
over
all here. My fault. It's all my fault.
I love it when it's somebody else's fault. Okay.
South Carolina, you out there?
When do we go on to some news of the day?
I am right here. Right.
All right, so we got Blog Talk working again. We're back on schedule here. We got 14 minutes left in this segment. And I think, let's go to Iraq, Mark.
Yo, I don't want to go there.
All right, but we need to talk about this because I honestly think we're going to have thousands of troops back in there by the end of the year.
I agree. We're going in to fight for the same piece of property a third time. What?
Why?
Because this idiot in the White House... This idiot in the White House decides he's got an ideological burr up his butt and want to pull those troops out. It's the single most stupid thing I have ever seen a president do outside of Jimmy Carter, who gave away the Panama Canal, which was, I think it's going to this is going to move that move down to number two. Number one is Obama just pulling the troops out. I can't believe this.
I fail to understand. I mean, we were not having any casualties in Iraq.
No,
the place was stable.
Yes,
and we've had troops in Japan for 70 years.
Yes,
we've had troops in Germany for 70 years. We've had troops in Korea for 60 years.
Yes.
We're paying these guys anyways. It's not like we're changing force structure, or we're not still writing paychecks. So why not just leave them sit there and keep the two brothers from fighting?
Because he wanted to blame Bush.
Wait a minute. Were we not invited by Japan? Were we not invited by Korea?
Diva.
Let Mark finish, and then I'll let you talk, Diva.
This guy's come in there. He said, we're going to get out of Iraq. That's what he campaigned on. He's pandering to his uber left-wing base. Now, you're talking about American lives and money here, folks. And now he comes up and he blames, quote, the mistakes made by the previous administration. All he had to do was nothing. Nobody was dying there. You look at a map. Look at a map, folks. You've got Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. The real bad guys are in Iran. You put a base in Iraq, you put a base in Afghanistan, you've got three countries under control, at least when it comes to the super wacko terrorists. Instead of what we have now, a well-funded, well-armed force that has taken over parts of Syria, Iraq, and parts of Lebanon. And these guys are going to keep marching. And unless we commit additional troops to stop these people, they're going to march right to Jerusalem and to Tel Aviv. And we'll sit back and do nothing because this guy is incapable of it. You don't go into and Bush the first. You don't go as far as we did when we went to the first Iraq war and then walk away. We had them on the run. Bush the second got us in there, and we'll debate whether or not we should have gone in there, whether that was a good or a bad thing. But nevertheless, we were there.
Once you're there, you own it.
You don't leave. That's the single dumbest thing I've ever seen, because there's no such thing as a power vacuum.
Right.
There's no in foreign policy, if you pull out, something's going to move in there almost immediately to take your place, and now we've got it. And where's this jackass? He's sitting up in Martha's Vineyard, and I'm sorry. There's no excuse for what he did. It's going to cost us a lot of money, and it's going to cost a lot of lives when this is said and done. And all he had to do was leave a base there. That's all he had to do.
Yeah, al-Maliki wanted 10,000. Al-Maliki and the generals wanted 10,000 troops.
And he's blaming the status of forces thing, which was a crock. Maliki gave him what he wanted, and he turned back on it because
okay.
Diva, and I'm going to be blunt. This is, you may know a lot of things, darling, but I'll tell you what. You don't know about this.
Okay.
Let me get a second. First off, obviously you didn't understand the deal that the previous administration made, that we were not going to keep a base there. We were going to pull the troops out. Secondly, President Obama was willing to keep troops in Iraq. However... They wanted immunity. Hold you. Well, let me finish. I sat here and let you stop.
No.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Okay. Wait a minute. I let you talk, so let me talk. I let you go on your little rant, and I sat here quietly. So let me talk.
If you got something you could say, Diva, that makes sense, I'm not going to listen to the same
I don't care if you
crap,
think it makes sense or not. What you were saying to me didn't make any sense, but I respected you enough to listen like you asked me to.
He's the president of the United States. If he wanted the troops to stay there, they'd stay there.
Jesus
he's
Christ.
So dumb.
No, the thing was,
it
came down to them getting immunity.
And
because if our soldiers had to kill to defend themselves, they could have been brought up on charges. That was not what was, because
that's
war
not,
was over, they could have been
true.
Brought up on charges, and that
that's
is true.
True.
Look it up. That
and
is true. The deal
the
came
York
down to, will you give our troops immunity if we keep them here? They would not. They refused. So therefore, you're not going to give our troops immunity. They don't need to be there to help you or to protect you.
Diva, he
deal
has
it. Deal with yourself.
Diva,
he did not.
Report it.
The New York Times reported that the deal was made, and he walked
give
away
me a
from
date.
It. That's from the New York Times. That's from
give,
his
give
support.
Give me the date, because the report
and
that
you know
I read, the report that I read said that, yes, there was a deal. But the deal didn't include immunity for the troops. So that's why
ahead,
he walked
Jeff.
Away.
Go ahead, Jeff, your
okay,
turn.
Let me say this. You're half right, Diva, in this, is that there was a date that the Bush administration said to the Iraqis that they were going to start pulling out, and that was the same date as what, that Mr. Obama pulled everybody out. But under the Bush administration, they said it will be contingent upon what's going on the ground at that time. And that is not what this man did. Maliki asked for 12,000 troops to stay. And somebody said no else, and Obama folded and pulled the people out so he could say that he took the people out of Iraq. Well, that's the foolishness and the ineptness of these people, because they think that this was a good move. And then they waited until ISIS took over the northern part of Iraq, was getting ready to kill off the Kurds before he decided he was going to try some sorties. This is ineptness. This is stupidity. And this is the ultimate thought, a misthought of what liberalism thinks. The last time you had this inept situation was with Jimmy Carter. Mr. Clinton was not inept like this when it came to having to keep the Iraqis in place. Now you have an Iran that has money, that has money, that has a lot of resources, and guess what's going to happen? They're going to be able to reach their objective of a nuclear weapon because this inept, backward-minded White House did what it did. Go ahead.
And well, and don't forget, this ISIS group has robbed, what, half a dozen banks, Mark?
Yes.
So they've got millions and millions of dollars in cash, probably U.S. cash, to work with, too. I mean, so, you know, you've got a lot of aspects to this that we're not thinking about. South Carolina, you want to chime in? Eric? Jeffrey? Have we lost our blog talk again?
They tell me I was too loud just now. Tracy said I was too loud on the bus.
Hello?
But
hey,
listen,
Eric,
are you guys on a bus again?
Backwards.
Hey,
backwards.
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
I will talk to you guys in a few, but backwards. This is the worst situation we could possibly be in. The world is on fire.
There comes a point in time where this president's got to stop blaming George Bush for his problems. He was elected president of the United States. He's perfectly capable of assessing what's going on there and what's good for the best interest of the United States. Anything that has Bush's fingerprints on it at all, he runs behind and blames Bush. You know what? Bush didn't make this decision. Barack Obama made this decision. He was happy to do it. He was bragging about it. Well, I got the troops out of Iraq and blah, blah, blah. Bull. No,
you
sir.
Do understand
guy,
that he was elected by
Diva,
he was elected by Democrats.
Diva,
he was elected
Diva,
by Democrats and independents, and you expect him to do what you want him to do, or you expect him to go along with your policies or what you
want
policies? Well, what's good for the United States of
foreign policy concept?
Well,
what's best for the United States of America is that we stay out of the Middle East. We stay out of these conflicts. So that's where you and I differ. Okay,
Diva,
but the thing
the
is, what you
have
to understand is
you're
not the only voice in America.
You can't.
You are not
the
only voice.
Diva, you got things
you
over
are
there.
Not. You are not the only voice in America. There are people who elected him. There are people who elected him, and there is a reason why we elected him. We elected him because we wanted to see a different administration than what we saw with Bush. We did not want to see us engaging in foreign conflicts, and we elected him twice because of that. That was the main reason why. That was one of the main reasons why he beat Hillary Clinton in the primary.
When your people start getting blasted out the air overseas, Diva, I think you'll be happy about that.
How about stay away from being overseas? How about not traveling overseas?
No, Diva, we're free
Diva,
to travel
Diva,
the world.
You can't.
We're
you
free
can't.
To travel the world.
Well,
we
then
do
that's
not
the risk
stop.
That you
stay
take
home.
Then. That's the risk that you
okay.
take. You don't invade
well,
another country because our
people like you guys
one at a time, guys.
The idiots to think like you with this, where you want to let these people go and run roughshod, where they buried 1,000 Christians alive, and then you sit back here talking about we wanted a different administration? That's foolishness.
Yeah, I don't understand how that's foolishness.
Absolute foolishness. So I got to be
done
with it for a while.
It is not for us. That's just like Muslims coming over here trying to change our Christian values into their values. We don't want that. So how are we going to go into a Muslim Arab nation and try to change their values?
You know what,
what they did to those Christians is horrible. But do we send in a military force because they're trying to keep their country pure? Is pure Islamic?
Pure from what? Listen, Diva.
They
want to
keep it a pure Islamic state. That's what they want to do.
Diva,
you have seven-year-old children to have their pictures taken holding severed heads.
Man, we have our own problems here. You got kids being killed by people just for the color of their skin. I don't see nobody saying sending the military troops in. Where's the sympathy
at
for
that? That's what they said about Adolf Hitler. We have our own problems.
Well, you know what? I'm not talking about Adolf Hitler. Well, we didn't get involved. We were forced to get involved when they bombed Pearl Harbor. There was nothing that should have sent us in Iraq.
Are you aware FDR sent an entire ship full of Jews out of returned them from New York Harbor to back to Germany, refused to allow them entrance into the United States?
Are you aware that we're doing the same thing to the kids who are coming across the Mexican border from Colombia?
They're
running away from a war zone, but you don't want to see it in an ideological point of view. You want to see it as some type of conspiracy theory, but you don't see how unstable Colombia is. But yet, when it comes to Jews, we sent them back. We sent those immigrants back to Germany to die. But you want
There's
your mind sending
a
bunch of
Hispanic kids
back to Colombia to die. Okay.
Diva, there's a whole lot of difference between a country with a high murder rate and people being rounded up and sent to extermination camps.
Murder.
Nobody's
rounding. Murder
no,
is murder.
No, it's different.
No,
no, it's not.
Murder is murder. Yeah, there is no difference. Murder is murder. When you're trying to get away from a situation where you fear for your life, it does.
Finally. I've been having trouble with my computer here, and I've been trying to control the conversation here, and I've been trying to mute.
Hello? Hello? Are we there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Hang on a second. Okay. So did you shut Diva down completely? Hello, Diva, where you at? They just told him you and her?
I think they did.
Are you guys really surprised?
Is that Brown?
No.
No?
This is 440.
440, hey, 440, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. She's not right. She doesn't understand that you can't, there's a thing in Matthew in the Bible, you can't serve two gods. He's not infallible. Jeez.
Excuse me,
she's going to French. Excuse me, Diva. You know we love you. So don't even try. You can get mad if you want to. We love you. But seriously, I had a friend of mine that I knew for a long time, and this shocked me. He all of a sudden, now this is a Christian guy, all of a sudden he comes up and he says that the story of Noah in the Bible was a myth. And I was like, dude, you got to be kidding me. And he said, yeah, it's a myth, man. So it was not, you know, one of those good days. But that's okay. We're still friends.
Yeah.
Hello? Leave you there? Hello? Oh, I think she must be mad at us again. Anyway, 440, where are you located, man?
In Ohio, north of Youngstown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're more about your Green Falls, aren't you, right?
I didn't hear you. I had some racket.
You're more of north of Trumbull County?
I'm in Jogues County.
Okay, hi, yeah, because that 440 sounds familiar. That area code, if I can mess the area code over.
I'm
330 in Trumbull County.
Oh, okay. I'm in Jogues County. I'm just
okay, yeah. Right,
yep.
Yeah, right. Up by Hiram
yeah.
College.
Oh, I'm all the way. I'm in and about all the way from. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Garrettsville to Orwell.
Oh yeah, I know where Garrettsville. Yeah, that ain't that far from here.
Yeah,
it's about 25
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, for 3 to 4 counties, I'm all in Amish country. Traveling the back roads.
No, man, it was crazy. God, I was born in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah? Where at?
Yeah. Cleveland Metropolitan, actually.
Okay. Where'd you live in Cleveland?
My parents lived on 99th Street.
Yep. But I'm real familiar with Cleveland. I get a kick out of Tracy because she thinks she knows Cleveland. She doesn't know Cleveland. She sees the superficial stuff, but
yeah. See, I'm in one.
There's a lot of things to do and see and be around in and all over the Cleveland area. So
I think Route 422 to Cleveland.
347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now here's Tracy Winbush.
Skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
the colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky.
And we're back, and this is Tracy and Friends, WSOM 600 AM. Call us at 347-945-5229 to voice your opinion. And we were talking about Iraq before we went to break, and we're coming back. We're going to talk about that a little more. I finally got Diva muted, and so that we can get somebody else can get a word in edgewise. So we are going to go around robin, and so where were you? What were you trying to articulate before we went to break? Now that the veins in your forehead are back where they belong, and your blood pressure's down, and
I had to go take a Xanax.
And two shots of whiskey.
And two shots of whiskey.
I wonder what you were doing out in the car.
You know, what's scary is it's that kind of thinking that we have in the White House right now. We have fought for that territory twice. It has cost this country hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. It has cost us thousands upon thousands of American lives, causing grief to families.
Yeah,
and now we're going to have to go in there a third time because these people that have come in there are so bad, even the Taliban doesn't want to have anything to do with them, which shows you how brutal they are. And we have treaties. NATO, if the Kurds, you know, the Kurds are trying to fight these guys. And, you know, the Kurds have their own problems with Turkey. And Turkey has its problems with its own Islamic fundamentalist people in Turkey. Turkey's a member of NATO. That's a recipe for disaster. This group also threatens Jordan. It threatens Lebanon. And it certainly threatens Israel. And all this guy had to do, because if the commentators over the last 2 years said, if you pull out, this is what's going to happen. If they knew it, if I knew it, the people in the White House knew it. And now, by the time this is said and done, it's going to cost a ton more money and a lot more American lives. And unfortunately, minding our own business and not going in there is not going to work, because when we have to fight them later,
there's nukes floating around,
it's going to get a lot
worse. Well, and now ISIS has confiscated the Iraqi military hardware that we left there, such as Abrams tanks. So now we've got Abrams tanks fighting Abrams tanks. So, this is going to get bloody really fast. Go ahead, Eric.
I mean, these are people that are beheading children, filming it, and putting it online. I mean, who on earth does that? I mean, you cannot rationalize. You can't negotiate with people like
that. And Glenn Beck gets a bad rap, but he was talking about this a couple of years ago. He had footage of these same people when they were in Syria. He had footage of a guy shooting someone, carving his chest open, and eating his heart. I mean, the bloodthirstiness of these people is just out of it's incomprehensible.
And they're screaming, "Allah, you Akbar," while they're doing it.
Right.
There's one out there where they buried a guy alive. Literally, buried this guy alive. He's begging us, please, I can't. I mean, they buried him alive.
Here's the problem. You know, unless you have a keen sense and keen understanding of what war is all about, okay, it's hard for you to understand the type of place you got to go to fight it. You know, and these folks, they're not willing to go there because they literally think that, we can be diplomatic, we can talk this thing out. There comes a point in time where you can't talk to the bully no more. He's going to knock your head in more and more the more you talk. And that's they see that as a sign of weakness. And right now, we are weak. If Jimmy Carter had gone in and just carpet bombed those folks that took over the U.S. Embassy
back in
Tehran, you know, this would have been over with, because they would have seen us as a strength, as a force to be reckoned with. And this guy is like, he's a wuss. Maybe he did deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. Maybe he did.
Well, and we have to fault Reagan too, because when we had the attack in Beirut, Reagan didn't respond either with overwhelming force. So, you know, you've got to lay the blame at everyone's feet about this type of stuff, because and those of you who haven't served, it's extremely hard to understand the mentality of unlimited warfare and the requirement for unlimited warfare. And the thing is, if we would demand that of our politicians, there would be less war, because the politicians like this limited war thing where we drop a drone here or we off a guy there, because they don't want the newsreels and they don't want the evening news to show you Dresden, 1944, 1945. They don't want you to see that, because that is unlimited war. That is what warfare is all about. London. How many thousand children died in the Blitz of London when the Germans were bombing London and dropping V1 and V2 rockets on it? That's the horror of war, and the politicians don't like the horror of war. Go ahead, 267.
Basically, okay. You basically have a caliphate that they're attempting to form between Syria and Jordan, and the moderates in Islam need to speak out against the radicals that are in that religion. That's not happening. So therefore, somebody needs to address the entire religion and say, you need to stop these radicals from engaging in these type of terroristic acts and trying to stop their attempts to try to form this caliphate. And that's something that's not coming from the presidency, and it's not coming from anyone in America either.
Yeah, because the thing
and
about
so
these groups
therefore
is,
that causes us to go over and to do these types of actions where they're trying to police this region. But you basically have a sort of endemic problem with them trying to form this caliphate. And like, this is something that they've been trying to do for a long time.
Yeah, and it's like these extremists, they turn on each other in a heartbeat, because what they're doing is, with the Sharia law, a lot of cases, they're making it up as they go.
440, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with 267 on that. I mean, it's exact. He hit it right on the nose, but I'm all about the scorched earth symbolism.
Right.
I mean, hey, if it's me, I love napalm. I mean, let's do it.
Well, that's the thing, and that's the thing about Vietnam.
When I get done with you, I'll make you scared. I ain't gonna scratch you.
Right. And that's the thing that people don't understand about Vietnam. The North Vietnamese were ready to surrender. They were ready to create another system, kind of like what we had in Korea, and we stopped carpet bombing Hanoi.
Well, did you see? That's the same thing they did. That's the same thing they did with Israel and the Palestinians. Dude, they did the same thing. Uh-oh, I'm getting bloody, so I better agree to a temporary truce so I can catch my breath. Yeah,
I don't know.
With that, I'm gonna take you out. And if I was Israel, I wouldn't stop.
And that's what I don't understand about Israel. We're going to have this ceasefire and give the enemy time to reload. I don't recall any ceasefires in the Second World War.
Yeah, that's all a ceasefire is.
Go ahead, Mark, your turn.
I don't understand the guilt that this country has. And looking at these half wars, I mean, we really, outside of, I think maybe, was it the Falklands? Have we really actually won a war since World War II?
Oh, no, not the Falklands. Oh, shoot.
Where that island?
Yeah, Reagan.
Yeah. Reagan.
The Cubans dropped troops in there, and Reagan went down there.
I mean, Korea, we fought to a truce.
Yeah, we're still at war in Korea.
Yeah, Vietnam was a disaster, and we had them on the ropes, and the American guilt, you know, kicked in. And,
but there's a lot of with the fall of the wall, there's the Russians turned the American population against Vietnam. I mean, there's the KGB did a masterful job of manipulating the college campuses and manipulating the media. And they have the documents showing that they did that.
And then you have the group that talked about, oh, well, we shouldn't have dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. That was racist because we had a different color skin.
Well,
no.
And now
a couple of million American lives with it.
Those people are running
the
show now.
Well, they are. And I just read an article here not too long ago. The commanding general, I can't remember his name, said that 3 days before Hiroshima, they actually incinerated more people with a conventional firebomb attack than they did at Hiroshima. So
we've never understood the use of power in foreign policy. We haven't since World War II, and we really need to get over this because, you know, we're listening to It's a Wonderful World. Well, yeah, you know, it is a wonderful world, but there's a whole lot of bad people in it.
That seems to be what people of Diva's persuasion, ideological persuasion, don't seem to understand. There is pure evil on the planet.
She's conflicted. She's conflicted. She thinks, how can it? In Matthew, it says, somewhere in Matthew, I think it's it says that you can't serve two gods.
Yeah.
You're right. And you know what? Mark, you're just wasting your time. You're not changing her mind on nothing. You're not. She can do no wrong in her eyes. So there's nothing that you're going to say to her that, you know, don't let the veins jump out in your neck.
Hey, they're popping up. When you're going into your ears through earphones, it magnifies the issue, believe me. Foreign policy is always a scary thing.
Well,
and we need to get our act together because I'm really afraid that
you can't be an isolationist. There's no such thing as being an isolationist. Yes, anymore. That's ignorant. You're not thinking like that.
You can't turn the clock back 150 years. I mean, the founders originally wanted us to be like Switzerland. I mean, that was kind of their plan. There was no mention of a standing army in the Constitution for a reason, but there was a navy because they understood you have to have sea power to have economic power, and the goal was to trade honestly with everyone and destroy anybody who screws with you. And then you had the Monroe Doctrine to start it, and it just kind of grew from there to where we became a world interventionalist power. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and then Woodrow Wilson in World War I. And so you can't put the genie back in the bottle once it's there, because right now we're the biggest guy on the block, and we're keeping all the little boys from beating up each other.
Well, you know,
and
what?
If we don't do
we're
it,
not,
go ahead.
We're not the only ones. We're not the only one. Everybody is sticking their nose in everybody's business, to be blunt
about
it. So you're just not going to walk away from it.
Right, and during the Cold War, you had us funding one side and you had the Russians funding the other side. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We had proxy war after proxy war after proxy war since the Second World War. Absolutely. I'm not going to say it hasn't happened.
We got to exercise our strength. We've got to let the world know that we're not going to take it. If you keep backing down, and he's reducing the size of the army, I am, you know, what are you going to do?
What is he?
And we're going to be going to break here in one heaven. We'll be right back.
Let's talk for a moment about a great...
Anybody there?
Yeah, I'm here, full four.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
It's crazy when Tracy leaves, ain't it? it's a whole new different ball game. She's gone. She's got to be sitting on the bus or wherever she's at, shaking her head like, why did I leave?
I've heard Mark get excited before, but, man, Diva just does something to him, man. I mean, it's like, whoa.
I have my theory about that, but I could never prove it. But I'm going to leave it alone. There may be a cause to that we don't know about.
Well, I know.
Are you reading my mind?
I know.
So.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I think when a lot of people come on the radio station, they don't, or when they call in, you're going to disagree with people. You know, there's going to be disagreement, but that's, you know, if you can talk to each other, that's the main issue. That's when you can work things out, you know. That's the whole deal. So,
yeah.
I mean, especially
well,
in this world. Especially in this format.
Yeah.
I mean, I disagree with you guys all the time, but, you know, I'm not going to hate on you for it. I mean, that's crazy. It'd be crazy if everybody thought the way I did. We'd really be in trouble.
But I honestly think that deep down, Obama wants to go back in Iraq. He doesn't want to go alone. He has that lead from behind mentality, so he doesn't want to look like the only bad guy, you know?
He wants to have a coalition.
He's got to talk. Well, that's the thing. He's got to talk. You're right. He's got to talk. He's got to talk to somebody. I don't know if he's doing that or not, but you ain't going to do it from Martha's Vineyard either. So,
yeah.
Or maybe he can. I don't know.
But normally when he's on vacation, it's a working vacation. He has all of his advisors with him on Martha's Vineyard. He's not there and not doing anything.
Well, I don't know. It's
you don't think he's hitting Michelle?
It's kind of hard.
No, I think he may be playing golf and doing other things, but at the same time, he's probably working at night with his advisors. Anytime he's over there, on, you know, at the vineyard, at Martha's Vineyard, he's not there just on vacation 24 hours a day.
I agree with that. That's a good possibility. I was trying to be a smart ass. I can't say that on here. I'll get yelled at.
I know. I want to go to Martha's Vineyard.
Me too. It's great.
I haven't lost anything up there. Not a thing. I can't understand what they're saying, man. I can't they just say cop? It's cop. I mean, what's a cop?
I can't understand them. You know that?
Yeah.
What is up with that?
You got to talk to a true Bostonian to get the full effect of that accent, man. I mean, it is crazy.
I'm from Gloucester.
No wonder the people from New York hate Boston. It's like, these guys can't even talk right. It's like, damn, dude.
It's a combination between almost like a British accent and an Irish accent. You have a lot of Irish people who live in that area, and a lot of them, they probably come directly from Ireland, and they have more of a Cockney-type accent, and they bring that to that region.
Yeah, it's like I told this one guy I know. He's from Boston. I think you know that there is an O in the alphabet.
My car!
And welcome back. This is WSOM 600 AM, Tracy and Friends in the Morning. I just like that video.
That's a good video.
I like that video. Miranda Lambert and Danica Patrick.
Okay,
I'm
starting to calm down.
Right.
I'm starting to calm down.
The Xanax and the whiskey's taking effect.
That's the additional whiskey.
Okay, yeah. That other two shots. This is Tracy and Friends in the Morning. Sticks is here and Mark's here. And our phone number is 347-945-5229 if you want to call in and take part in the conversation. On the computer line here, I've got Philadelphia, I've got 440, I've got South Carolina, and I've got Eric. And I've got a couple of folks that are just listening and don't want to talk. So we're talking about Iraq and foreign policy and things we've done right, things we've done wrong, some history, and just where we're headed and in the future, because I honestly believe we are going to end up with troops on the ground and folks coming home in flag-draped coffins again. I am so sorry to see this happen. I am so, so sorry to see that we've wasted everything that we've done. I mean, and you have to look at the stats. I mean, since President Obama has taken office, we've had more people killed in Afghanistan than we had the entire time that President Bush was in office.
I know, it really bugs
me
because
we've got a
foreign
policy
force.
Disaster going, right, Mark?
That's it. That's it. And all roads, for a while, a lot of this, people said this was a lot about oil, and it really isn't. I think that, we have had sufficient energy production in the United States where that is an issue is kind of, it's still there, but not like it was before. Right now, all roads end at Israel, and that's where the alliance is, and that's a scary, scary thing because, the southern border's open, and you don't know who's coming across that border right now.
Did you see the O'Keefe thing where he dressed up like
Osama bin Laden
and just walked right across the border? Not so blind, Mike. I see you out there. How's it going?
Hey, good morning. I hear you. Bring it down to my needs, you know. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, well, you know.
Mark,
we had the joke about three blind mics.
I'm glad
ahead,
you
Mike.
Made this into the boys' club today.
I guess so. Mark, I agree with you. I'm tired of hearing people on the conspiracy side constantly shouting, we're in Iraq to get all their oil. The truth is that what it's really about, it's about oil to some degree, but it's not about oil for us. It's about oil for Europe. Europe gets most of what comes out of there. And our concern is that if the supply gets cut off, it will raise the international prices because then Europe will be in the same markets where we buy from, and they'll be driving the prices up because of the scarcity. So we're not there because we want the oil. We're there to make sure Europe gets it. And once again, we are taking care of Europe, who won't take care of itself, and yet they want to preach to us. The Germans, the French, and to some degree the British want to preach to us. The three countries that benefited the most by what we did in World War II, the ones who, in my mind, have the least right to any bragging rights about anything, you know, it's just ironic, you know. There's, you know, our Ukrainian policy, our NATO policy, everything we do is always, let's consult with Europe. Why? Their opinion doesn't matter anymore. They're irrelevant. They can't even take care of themselves, and I don't see why we have to be so committed to laying out treasure and blood, like Stick says, to protect their energy. It's almost like, let's ramp up our own, let's become an energy exporter, and let's capitalize on Europe's misery and stupidity and socialist government. Let's capitalize. Let the Middle East go to hell in a handbasket. Let them do what they're going to do. Let the oil supply get choked off, because that's their revenue, too. They have an invested interest to make sure the oil supply. So let them spend some of their billions that they make every year off of us, and let them man their own armies, and let them buy military equipment from some government that wants to sell it to them. And, you know, the problem is we have created a global nanny state, the United States has, because we go in and help people rather than see what they can do for themselves first.
Go ahead, Billy, your turn.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Billy hasn't spoken in quite a while. I was going to give him a chance to chime in.
I mean, but I basically agree with Ron Paul that we need to pull back out of some of these regions because these nations aren't actually paying the United States to go into these regions and conduct different types of like wars, and it's basically costing this country a whole lot of money. So I think that if these conflicts can be resolved on more of a local level, that needs to happen.
But what do we do? I mean look at what's going on in Iraq and Syria right now with it's a genocide. Do we have any type of a humanitarian what's the word I'm looking for, Mark?
Obligation.
Yeah, to protect those people?
Yes, we do.
We do have an obligation, but what we need to do is we need to confront the entire thing of Islam itself and say, look, you need to get these radicals in this religion under control. And we need to have some type of campaign to put that religion in the spotlight and say that this particular faith has definite problems, and they need to address these problems to have these conflicts not happen. But every time this happens all over the globe, it's not the obligation of this country to go in and do some type of action to try to resolve these conflicts. I mean, that's not completely our role.
And that's the problem, though. A lot of these countries think that we have an obligation, and that's like silly theory. We're not obligated to help you guys, you know?
Right. And this is why I think we should go to the farce of the UN and actually make it very public and go to the UN and demand humanitarian action on the part of the UN. And while the whole world sees them for the bunch of petty squabbling, agenda-driven idiots they are, we should always start there first just to humiliate the UN, because you're right. You know, when I was a kid, just to tell you how I feel about the Arab nations right now with all their wealth, when I was a kid, the big push was the starving kids in India. And we used to do food drives and everything else, and we had international care and everything else we would raise money for. And us kids here in the United States, little kids in the project, poor kids, we were sacrificing so that we could contribute our pennies to that. And then one
trick
day,
or treat for trick or treat
yeah,
for UNICEF,
for
I remember.
UNICEF and everything, yeah. And one day India ripped it from me permanently. One day on the news, India exploded a nuclear bomb. They're first. And I'm going, you've got starving people, and you want me to care more about your people, and you divert, in those days it was hundreds of millions, not billions, but to a nuclear weapons program. Where's the tractors? Where's the seed? Where's the pipe for irrigation? Why aren't you feeding your own people? And that's when they ripped it. North Korea, the hungriest people in the world live in North Korea.
Yeah.
They're the most
underfed
population. Yeah, and they've got nuclear weapons and now long and medium-range missiles. Their priorities
okay.
are totally screwed up.
Okay, 440, it's your turn. And then after that, 330-360.
Yeah, North Korea's eating tree bark. But the one thing I wanted to address to Mike is that, you know, we do belong to NATO. And I have, and also I wanted to ask, more or less ask you, do you guys think that Germany is starting to become an ally of Russia? I smell something really wrong going on there.
Mark, you're our foreign policy expert.
I wouldn't be surprised. They are dependent on them for their natural gas, and we have done nothing to alleviate that issue. They are, I mean, Russia is historically a European power. Prior to the beginning of World War I, all of the monarchs in all of the European countries were basically offspring of Queen Victoria. They were all cousins. And so there's an historic relationship there with Russia and Europe. Putin, as bad as he isn't a communist in the sense that people like me growing up understood communism. And so I think if the tie that binds is natural gas, they certainly have a kind of a predisposition towards moving towards it. I don't know what the natural gas supplies are in Western Europe, but right now that pipeline comes from Russia through Ukraine and into Europe, and that's a lot of incentive to, you know.
Isn't that why we tapped in on Merkel's phone and all that? Mm-hmm. I mean, don't we have a feeling in the first place that she's not on the up and up?
I would not be surprised if that was the case. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
Go ahead, Jeff. If you get cut off, because I'm trying to find where the noise was coming. I was trying to find where the noise was coming from, and the mute button is sticking again, so you could find yourself muted.
Let me say this then, and I'll get out your way. I apologize, first of all, for going off while you guys are on there. You're handling this quite well and doing it well. But, the reason why you're in different places in the world is because you have interest in those places or an ally. You do have the obligation to your allies, and you do have the obligation to your interest. If you don't want the Middle East to become a cinder block, if you don't want it to become a cinder block and destroy the economy of the world and have tons and tons of people that are dying of nuclear poisoning and this, that, and other, then you better be in Iraq and you better be in Afghanistan stopping, first of all, Iraq from getting from getting a nuclear weapon. Number two, making sure that right over across the border where we went in and got bin Laden hiding, that they don't sit up there and have a doggone, their country get overthrown and their nuclear weapons taken over by these radicals. Don't think that that's not the goal. You have to understand, this is a world view, not a United States view. You are everywhere in the world because you have to be. Now, we don't go in certain areas where there's tribal fighting and stuff. We didn't go into Rwanda and all those places like that. Why? We didn't have any interest there. But you are going to have interest there because they have a ton of natural resources in Africa, and they're going to go in and get them. Russia's there already. China's there. They're building bridges and roads. China is and turning to the favor of the natives there. And, the missionaries know this. And the thing is we have to think about those things. Whether you agree with it or not, that's one thing. But here's the thing. If you don't, they will outspend you, and they will be here on your shore challenging you because Islam itself, the writings in the Quran, period, are all radical. They're not nice and peaceful. It's not meant to be peaceful. They say, we have to make sure the world bows down to Allah. And if you don't, we kill you. We torture you. We put you away. That's what Islam is. Now, if you don't want to believe that's up to you. But look at the evidence. Read the Quran. Mm-hmm. Go online and read some writings from it. Mm-hmm. Listen to what these leaders are saying. We're not going to stop until we love death more than you love life. Mm-hmm. So that's how they get you.
But
right. That's what we're dealing with here. 10 seconds, guys. So we're going to be going to break here, 8-7. And this is Tracy and Friends, 347-945-5229. Call in when you get a chance.
I'm Julio Valerius with your headline.
Yeah, but even though we have international interests around the world,
yeah,
we can't be in these prolonged wars in every country when we have these local conflicts to break out. What needs to happen is they need to do some type of moratorium on the religion of Islam. We need to demand that the chief clerics of that religion go to the UN,
mm-hmm,
and we need to demand that some type of enlightenment period begin inside the religion, because these conflicts are coming out of the religion, so we can't go and fight wars based upon people who are Islamic all over the world.
Right.
I mean,
and Philadelphia, I agree with you, And I think Jeff very eloquently stated the case for how we're being manipulated. Because we're told it's our responsibility, otherwise all these bad things will happen. I'm sorry, Jeff. These emirs, these Faisal princes over there, these wealthy Arab nations, wealthy on oil money, some of these nations, the average person has a net worth of $1 million, like in Dubai and Kuwait and places like this, they have more to lose from this, what's going on over there, than we do. In the short term, they have more to lose. We are terrible negotiators. We should be telling them, hey, we'll step in, but we want 1 million barrels of oil per day as payment at $50 a barrel, and we'll sell it to the Europeans and make our money back. We won't negotiate with these people. They've got us afraid of them. And I'm talking
about... And
that's
what Ron Paul was saying.
The Arab princes have convinced us that the radical Muslims are a bigger threat to us than they are to them. No, they're not. They are a bigger threat to the indigenous local governments there, these kingdoms, these fiefdoms, these little prince ships and everything they have over there. They like their lavish lifestyle, then let them support their own defense. Then we go in. But we don't just go in with a blank checkbook and bail these billionaires out all the time. That's where I disagree with Jeff.
Right, and that's basically what Ron Paul was saying. We need to demand some type of payment. If we have to go into these countries and do some type of police action, we need to be paid.
Yep, we need to be paid. We need to have something in it for us other than this boogeyman down the road. Someday there'll be nuclear weapons and they'll bring them here to the United States. Well, that could be 5 or 10 years down the road, but I'll tell you something. 3 weeks down the road is the overthrow of Saudi Arabia if we let it just say, guys, you know, write a check and we'll gladly help out. And we just sit there with our arms folded, our hands in our pockets, just waiting to be asked to come help. We're not writing the blank check anymore. We've got American cities having riots. We've got an educational system that's collapsing in this country.
Yeah,
we are $17 trillion in debt. We have more debt right now than we do national gross domestic product in a year.
Right.
We are heading toward the way of all these collapsed, failed economies around the world, and still people see us as the deep privileged pockets. Wrong.
No, I mean, we basically have a situation in the Northeast where many of the public school systems are collapsing because they don't have money.
Yeah.
And so that's going to affect people for generations.
We have a city here in South Carolina that 2 years ago laid off their police department. They have no police or fire protection. They are out of money.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July.
Welcome back, Tracy and friends, WSOM 600 AM, 347-945-5229 is the number if you want to come in, call in and participate. What happened to that attitude, Mark?
I have no idea. I want to comment a little bit, Styx, on what we were talking about during the break, because as you're looking as to why we should or should not be in the Middle East and facing kind of the problems that we have, you've got economic issues, you've got ideological issues. But we said earlier that, you know, we obviously had an interest in the oil that was there, and we still do today, but it is greatly diminished as we've increased our energy production here in the United States and in the Western Hemisphere. Then we have this treaty with Israel. You know, in the entire world, there's about 13 million Jews. And of that, in the United States, there's about 5.5 million of the 13 million Jews. You add up the Jewish population, it might equal maybe three states of the United States. So if you're of the left-wing ideology that believes we should not be engaged, you know, in these kinds of activities in the Mideast, you're going to disengage yourself from Israel. And I have come to the conclusion, watching this president, that had he had what he wanted, he would have thrown Israel under the bus and walked away. If you're looking at sheer numbers and you're making foreign policy decisions, why would we be friends with Israel when there's 1.5 billion Muslims right over the border and they got oil? And there are ideologues that ask that question. And if you're looking at what's been going on, is Obama has been bowing to the Arab world, you know, kowtowing
since the day
to the
he
Arab
took
world
office.
And kind of screwing Israel, you don't have to be very smart to come up to the conclusion of what's going on here. And you get into Europe, and you see the anti-Semitism growing in Europe, and that, I think that's a direct result of these huge amounts of Muslims that have moved into Germany, France, Britain, and they have not been integrated into their society. These are a foreign group of people in a foreign
And we have a problem here in certain cities with the same
with
thing.
With the same thing.
Dearborn, Michigan, for example.
So, I mean, we all want to be kumbaya, can't we all get along? And I have Muslim friends, I have Jewish friends, I've got African-American friends, and, you know, for folks of good heart, good mind, and good intent, you know, that kind of a world is great, well, and I wish we could have it. But you know what?
But we do have that world, Mark.
Where?
The United States of America. By and large, up until just recently, people from all races, creeds, and faiths could be together in the same room and have a relatively peaceful, productive conversation. And we're losing that so quickly.
Well, you foster hate among different groups of people in this country. I mean, what do you expect's going to happen?
Well, you know, we've got a Democrat Party that has built itself on thou shalt steal and thou shalt covet. That's what the Democrat Party has built itself on in the last 20, 30 years. Thou shalt steal, and thou shalt elect a government that will steal, and thou shalt covet your neighbors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Donkey, maidservant, manservant, house, wealth. Instead of asking your neighbor, how did you get that? What do I need to do? How do I need to work to get that? So, let me see. Eric, it's your turn. Okay. Wow, Eric's got a lot of noise going on there. South Carolina, you there? He's not there either. 440. Two, six, seven.
Well, as far as Israel is concerned, Israel is more of a proxy government for westernized nations in that region. Basically, a lot of their intelligence agencies, they're able to give their intelligence on the different Arab nations back over to the CIA. So they're a form of our proxy government over there. That's what their chief role is now, and that's the reason why they're still in the good graces of this country, is because they do different types of operations, like in terms of military and in terms of intelligence for this country. So that's the reason why they're getting aid from this country still. But I think that what we need to do in the future in terms of our foreign policy and like in terms of the use of our military in these different regions, we need to demand some of these Arab nations, because you have this conflict that is inside their religion that they haven't resolved as yet. These conflicts are going to continue to happen. We need to demand some type of payment anytime we take our military over to these countries and engage in any type of warfare. These countries need to pay us something. And as someone said before, we just can't go over there and just have a blank check, because we have problems in this country where we have certain systems that are starting to fall apart. And we need to use that money to try to address these problems that we have here.
Yeah, now, how do you answer?
And I say use some of that money to help the families of the fallen over there too.
Well, but Philly, how do you answer those who would say, and I've heard this from mainly from the left, well, we can't do that because an American soldier is not a mercenary. Those operations that we do out of the goodness of our heart and out of our humanitarian.
Yeah.
Our humanitarian spirit. How do you answer those people?
Well, during the Iraq War, most of the fighting towards the end of the war, it was fought by people who were mercenaries. I mean, you basically had different companies
like Blackwater
were going in there, and they were doing the different actions of the military in that country. So I think at this point, since we're in this type of economy where we're dealing with a global economy and we have domestic issues here in which we have systems in place that are falling apart. We basically have these conflicts that have to do with this particular type of religion that has not gone through a period where they've been enlightened enough to try to keep these radicals at bay. We need to demand from these Arab nations some type of payment if we have
to do a military
action in their country.
What they need to do, if they're going to have a conflict, if they're going to have a fight against themselves, keep it to yourself, okay? Now, here's the problem. You're dealing with some radicals, okay? If you want to say we're dealing with radicals and not the whole, then you're dealing with the radicals. The whole needs to go ahead and shut them down. Take care of that problem. Make sure it doesn't happen again, or else we're going to come over there and kick your butt. The problem is they haven't had a good butt kicking yet. All right? They haven't had a good butt kicking yet, and that's exactly what we need. If we're going to go and do this, we need to go and do it.
Right.
Scorched
right.
earth policy. Scorched earth. Period.
We have yet to wage unlimited war. Go ahead.
Exactly.
I say drop a dip a 500-pound bomb in pig's blood and drop it.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, I mean, okay. I've read stories about troops in Vietnam that were relatively close to a B-52 carpet bombing, and the emotional impact of that on your enemy is just the ground shakes so bad. I read a report or an article that the ground shakes so bad you cannot control any of your bodily functions. Even if you're not physically hurt, it's just that the force of that weapon is just absolutely amazing. Go ahead, Mike.
What's crazy to me is the fact that you've got these folks, and they don't realize. I mean, when you've got someone that's fighting for money, that's one thing. But when you got some folks, when you got folks that are fighting for an ideology, that's a whole different animal, man. You got to break their spirit. You have to, get rid of that.
Well, not only that, I mean, and Jeff brought this up earlier, and it's a concept that Westerners and Christians can't understand. We love death more than you love life. What one of us would strap a bomb to our child?
That's like going to church for them.
Right. 72 virgins.
Exactly.
And we can't, and until you can grasp your enemy's thought process, you can't fight your enemy effectively. I mean, even the Germans in World War II, as bloodthirsty as they were, they still had a reverence for women and children. Go ahead, Mark. You want to say something?
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I remember The Godfather 2, when Michael Corleone was down at Cuba, and he was eating his birthday cake, and he said, "I saw something today that makes me concerned." And he said, "We were driving by, and there was a rebel captured by the Cuban government. And he was not afraid to die." And that is a concern. I mean, that's exactly what these people don't have the same values we do. And if they say, "We want to kill you, and we don't mind being killed in the process."
And it's not even, I mean, no soldier wants to be killed, but you go into battle knowing that it's a great possibility, and you'll put yourself in harm's way. But who puts their wife and child in harm's way and hides behind them?
Or who straps bombs onto themselves and goes blow themselves up in order to blow?
Well, Japanese kamikaze pilots.
Yeah, and you know, that was the problem that we faced.
And we forget there were Banzai troops that did the same thing in the Second World War. And that's the reason they dropped the atomic bomb, because they knew it.
Truman looked at that and said, "We can't fight that. We're going to have to destroy them." And that's, we're looking at the same thing here. There's no difference.
Right.
And if the moderate Muslims are there, please speak up.
Yeah, take control of your religion.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
They can't, for the same reason that when Hitler came to power as chancellor, his party was the minority. And yet they were, because they were the most activist and dangerous,
right,
the majority just walked away. Because the party that speaks up against the Muslims, you're declared to be an infidel, and your family and everybody's fair game for beheading, killing, burial.
Yeah, I mean, if my pastor told me to put a bomb on myself and blow myself up, I'm going to tell him to kick rocks.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why that's not happening in Christianity, because Christianity went through a period of enlightenment where you did have a period where people were persecuted.
You did not,
if they
you
weren't
did not
Christian.
Have that. You did not have that. You did not have, you know, people taking, you know, and just destroying other people with bombs and stuff like that. No.
But
you
did have a period where the Christian church did go through a period where they tortured people who did not believe in the same beliefs that the church tended to accept.
At what point? Can you tell me, was it after the Muslims and the Moors came in and took over?
No, it was. It was during the period when the Catholic Church basically controlled a lot of the European governments, and you had a form of Inquisition that happened, and people were tortured if they didn't hold Christian beliefs. But as a result of that period happening, the church was able to learn its mistakes, and it was able to be more tolerant of beliefs that were not in line with church doctrine. Islam is that hasn't happened inside the Islamic religion. You haven't had that enlightenment period.
What you had was kings who decided that they wanted to use the church to their advantage. There's a distinct difference. There's a very distinct difference. Now, when you're talking about Sharia law, that is a form of law that states that you do certain things to certain people. If they don't convert to Islam, guess what? You kill them. Okay? You don't let them coexist peacefully.
Yeah.
You kill them.
And the Catholic Church did that at one time too. The Catholic Church did that at one time too during the time of the Inquisition. But what I'm saying is that the church learned from its mistakes, whereas this particular religion of Islam has not learned from those same mistakes. And the whole religion has not evolved.
Was it the Catholic Church or was it the king?
The people who conducted the torture were people who were priests inside the Catholic Church. They were people who worked for the church, who tortured people who happened to have different sets of beliefs that were in conflict with church doctrine. These things happened inside the Christian church.
I'm asking you, was it as a result of the church and the Bible, or was it a result of the king?
No, what I'm saying to you is that it was a result of the church and the Bible, of people who were scientists and other people who had belief systems that were in conflict with church doctrine and with what people believed, what was in the Bible. They were tortured and killed during the Middle Ages. These events did happen inside the Christian church, but what I'm saying is that the Christian church evolved over time, and it was more tolerant of people who had beliefs that were contrary to what the church believed and what they felt was in the Bible. Whereas Islam has not gone through a period like that.
And that's the reason why you have these fundamentalists the way you do. Philadelphia, listen to me. You had a period of time in the Bible where you did not see this going on. Okay?
You didn't see it during the time when Catholic priests did torture people.
I'm not talking about Catholicism. I'm talking about Christianity. Okay? I'm talking about the Christian church.
But the major...
Hold on, Philadelphia. What you got is you have people, individuals, okay? Not the church as a whole. That's why I said to you, who was the main motivator for this? Was it the church?
The church was the main motivator.
No.
For the Inquisition.
Church? Was it the Bible or was it the individual? Does the Bible state it's the priest?
It's the job of the priest to interpret the scripture for the people. And it was at the direction of the priest that people were tortured.
No. Therein lies the problem. At the behest of the priest, not at the behest of the Word of God. You see what I'm saying?
But the priest served as the arbiter of who interpreted scripture. And it was the church's order that people be killed.
It was at the order of individuals.
It was the flawed individuals who were at that time in the power position in that any given religion. If you study religion, Philadelphia, every single religion, some point, reaches what I call their teenage years, where you can't tell them anything. They think they're right, and they go on a holy crusade around the world, and it's about eight. If you study religion, every single religion that ever was, I don't care whether it's Shin, Tao, Jew, whatever, Muslim, when they reach 800 to 1,000 years old, they go on a crusade where they think they're right and everybody else is wrong. And the Muslims have hit their teenage years right about now. They are doing what every major religion has ever done in the history of the world. Even the pagan religion did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. But
the
that's
Jews
basically
did it,
what I was
where
saying.
Where they were just slaying
that,
people because they were Jews and felt they were righteous in slaying other people.
Right, but that's basically what I was saying, is that Islam has not gone through a period of any type of reformation. Islam has not gone through a reformation period.
Right.
That's why we're seeing all of these conflicts.
We live in modern times. See, in ancient times, you had to get your butt on a horse or a camel, and you had to ride for about 3 or 4 months somewhere to pick up a sword and then go create mayhem. Now that with the world, you can create mayhem in 12 hours from where you live, from anywhere on the planet, with weapons where it isn't mano a mano, it's one person, one idiot with an ideology and the means can take out 5,000 people.
And back then, the Muslim clerics, they fought side by side with the soldiers. They didn't just send the guys off the war and blow themselves up.
Exactly. They led. Joan of Arc, you know, led her troops into battle because she heard voices. The great Viking religious leaders and all did the same thing. They went to the head of the line and fought in the battle.
And as an example, I mean, all you have to do is look at what Hitler did. I mean, you're talking about a man that used his own version of the Bible and his occultic beliefs, and he pursued the Jewish folks and other people that didn't fit into that mold. And
right.
As a matter of fact, Hitler had a connection to the Islamic faith. You got to look at that area of connection that was there. But as a whole, if you look at the Bible, and if you look at the Islamic faith, you'll see points in there where, you know, individuals are told from the Quran that they need to kill the infidel. You know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it's not something that I'm trying to, you know, bring down the Islamic faith, but you've got people that see that and they go out and they want to kill the infidel. Make him bow before Allah or kill him. You know, and that's the big difference.
Yeah. And that's because, as I said, the religion has not been reformed. It hasn't gone through a reformation. Which basically had to happen with Christianity.
Yeah, I mean,
and so what needs to happen is the world needs to put pressure on people who are Islamic to put their religion through some type of reformation. It needs to be reformed.
How does the world do that? How do you talk to a fool?
But personally, I believe there are various ways it can be done, but some type of movement needs to begin. Otherwise, these conflicts are going to break out all over the globe.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the fact that, not only that, you look at the fact that all these Muslim-owned stores, now the Muslim religion condemns alcohol and tobacco use, but yet they have no problem selling it to us.
The problem is that with every one of the reformations came a group that split off from the main church, the ideology, and started their own group. And they were the reformers, and that's what's not going to happen in the Muslim religion right now. You don't have the cleric standing at the mosque saying it's time for a reformation. You just don't have it, and they're still locked in the old traditional orthodox ways that they did things. They're saying that Muslim is going to hell in a handbasket because of Western influence. That's why women can show their face, they can show their legs and arms and stuff, and it's almost. And again, it's a parallel to what goes on in this country with people like Jimmy Swaggart and some of these more traditional, extreme, conservative Christian leaders.
All right, guys, we're back. I screwed up the buttons again. But the problem with the EPA is it's full of environmentalists.
Yeah, you know, you know who we have to thank for that.
Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Yeah, that horrible, horrible, horrible president that they vilify. It's
but
Richard Nixon.
Why is Congress?
And the Justice Department
is
full of social justice people. Same parallel.
Right. Right. But why is the legislature, the legislative body, the House and the Senate, so willing to give their power away? Because the way the Constitution was written, they should, if they want to protect the environment, they should pass law saying these standards have to be met, and then the Justice Department should enforce those standards. And that should be all there is to it. And if you want to change the standards, then you have to write a law, and you have to get it passed through the House and the Senate, and then the President signs it, and we change the standards. Why can't we do that?
Because that's too much work. It's very easy for them to say, here's what we want to do. Go forth.
I think it's a lot of plausible deniability.
Well, it's always plausible deniability. That's how they do things. Nobody wants to take responsibility for anything, anywhere, anytime in this country, let alone our government officials who don't want to take responsibility for anything. You know, it would be so refreshing to have somebody stand up there and say, you know what, we really screwed up.
Yep.
Now let's fix it.
Yep. Go ahead, Mike. Okay. South Carolina, you out there?
I'm right here. I'm right here.
There we
okay,
go.
We're all working. Yeah. We're all working.
You guys are you calling guys are talking about go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that Mark said it's because it's too much work. That's why they don't do it through Congress. No, Mark, I don't think that's the reason because it's too much work. It's because it's this elitist attitude. They don't have majority support. It would never get through Congress, but they know better than you do what's right, and therefore they do it as regulation because they can slam those through as a decision of the bureaucrats sitting in the position to do it.
I'll go with that. That makes sense. Yeah,
Hold it. I got to write this down in my diary. Mark, can I have this in writing so I can show it to my wife? I actually said something that made sense.
Hey,
I want to relish in the moment of going on mute to meditate on that.
one of the things the courses that I've been taking, and when I started it, I read one of the texts that they wanted us to read, and I was glad that they injected Milton Friedman as the counter to it. But the whole notion of social responsibility was not something that was thought up by businessmen. Okay, it was thought up by those in the academic world, in order to force businessmen to feel guilty and give back to, quote-unquote, give back to society. Milton Friedman called it nothing more but pure and unadulterated socialism and communism. But as I've kind of read through this whole social justice and social responsibility subject, I can see a clear pattern of what has happened starting in the late 50s, and even going back to way back to Drucker, you know, back in the 40s, there has been a concerted effort by progressives to get businesses to think that they're having to, you know, give back. And Friedman says the only responsibility, the social responsibility of business is to increase its profits. It has no social responsibility. It has nothing to do with you know, bettering the community. It has everything to do with them doing what they do. Business is in business to make money, you know, and not make money to give to someone else.
Look at the shakedown. Liv.
Who are you shaking down?
No, the American. No, I'm talking about the charity that we all get shaken down for.
United Way.
I don't know of a single employee in this country that doesn't get shaken down at work, but for the American Way.
United Way.
Yeah,
we're
in the service.
The military experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Combined Federal Campaign is what they shook us down for in when we were serving.
Yeah, $3 a month out of your paycheck.
I got a little story about United Way. Of course, one company I worked at, everybody got shaken down for that. So one of the guys I worked with was given, and they came in, they brought these people, and they were selling supplemental insurance. And it just turned out that the supplemental insurance they were selling cost the same amount every month is what he was giving United Way, so he just called in and canceled his United Way and picked up the insurance. He said charity begins at home.
A little symmetry to that story over there.
Yeah. It's funny, too, and ironic in a way that the European socialistic-type governments don't have this thing about corporate social responsibility. If you look at the contribution statistics around the world globally, the American corporations give something like, it's almost 100% of all the corporate giving in the world, and the whole rest of the world doesn't add up to like 1.5%. And in France, it's non-existent. It's not a corporation's job. That's why the government has all these social programs. And the French citizen doesn't contribute, but neither are the companies expected to either. There is none of this social responsibility crap.
Right, and well, the problem with having the government be your charitable arm is it makes you as a human go dead inside.
Well, not only that, Sticks, it politicizes prioritizing giving. This is because if the Congress is to the right, you're going to get a certain type of charitable action by the government. If the Congress is to the left and progressive or extreme liberal, you're going to get a whole different set of priorities, targeting their voting base, not targeting what's ultimately best for the country, targeting what's best for their party or their self-interest. And again, Milton Friedman said there's nothing wrong with greed. Greed is nothing more than highly motivated self-interest.
Right. What do you think, Philly?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with greed, but at the same time, we're looking at a wealth gap between people who are extremely wealthy and people who are poor, and is greater than any time in modern history.
No, that's
so
not true.
So we need to be able to regulate greed.
No,
hold on,
true.
Mike. Let him finish. Let him finish, then I'll let you rebut.
Thank you.
Go
and
ahead,
we need,
Philly.
And we need to have we basically need to have some type of equality financially in this country, which we currently don't have.
Why?
And that's going to require the government to help to regulate different types of financial markets. I mean, the government's going to have to regulate financial markets to some degree to try to deal with the wealth gap, because it shouldn't be that the top 400 people own 95% of the wealth of the whole nation. That shouldn't be the case.
Why not? Go ahead, Mike.
Because that's not fair to people who work in corporations. They're not able to share in the bulk of the profits that the corporation is able to generate. And the people in senior management are not doing all of the work.
Okay, hold on, Billy. Let Mike rebut you, because I got 2 minutes left. I got 2 minutes left. Go ahead, Mike. I got 2:21 left.
First of all, it's not true. Historically, the greater disparity between the poor and the working poor and the wealthy of the world was in the late industrial age, around 1890 to 1900, when people like Carnegie, the founder of U.S. Steel Corporation, was sold that company for $455 million in a day when the average worker in the United States worked for $8 to $12 a month. You do the math on that, and I'm sorry, Philadelphia, your numbers are way off. The other thing is, yes, and in that day, you had a half a dozen wealthy people that owned just about everything in the United States. Today, at least, we've got it spread to 400. And today, because of very liberal regulations that allow you or anyone else to buy a stock certificate, you can have ownership in any of those same companies, and you can have a piece of the action. Back then, that was not the case. So your figures are just way off.
And I'm going to weigh in on this, too, because we have to remember. Oh, my goodness, feedback. But anyways, we've got, we're saying we're going to take this money from these people, and you're never going to relieve these people from their money. Warren Buffett is giving his money, saying he's not leaving it to his kids. He's giving it to the Gates Foundation. Guess who's going to run the Gates Foundation? Warren Buffett's son. And it goes back to John D. Rockefeller's theory about own nothing, control everything. You're never going to relieve those 400 families of their money. So you might as well just quit trying. What we need to do is train the other 99% of us to achieve the wealth that they have through hard work and investment.
Right.
I mean, that's what's got to happen. We got to quit coveting what somebody else has, because the super rich, you're never going to relieve them anyway. So you might as well just get that out of your thick head.
Wait a minute.
One time, Eric, go ahead. And first thing after the break, I got 5 seconds. 4-3. We're going to break. When I come back, I'll let Eric speak, and then Phil will be next.
Do you find yourself constantly tired?
It's a big panacea for you to believe that hard work and investment by the average person is going to get them into the extremely wealthy category.
It won't make them a billionaire.
That's not
going to
happen
in
every case.
But it will make them.
And what happens in a lot of cases where people are extremely wealthy, they have business networks that the average person does not have access to. Because so what needs to happen inside
the
corporation, you need to have more of a profit-sharing motive inside the corporation. The average employee that works
for the
factory floor,
and the average employee won't sign up for
that. Needs to have access.
Philadelphia, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're flat
no,
out wrong.
No, sir, I'm not wrong.
Of the
average employee
the
that works on the factory floor, the person
money.
That works in middle management, they need to have a greater
of
access.
The 400 on the floor
they need to have a greater access
the
to profit
lifetime.
Sharing.
It's not
that
about
occurs
advantage.
In,
it's about
that
attitude.
That occurs in
education.
Companies across the board.
Nah,
you shouldn't
you're
have
wrong.
In senior
you're
management
wrong.
Where
you're wrong.
People have these balloon
you're
packages
the Forbes
where
400
they can
this
just leave
to make
the
it, you
high
have
and dry.
$1.3 billion.
And the company can be almost completely bankrupt.
90-some-odd people didn't make the list
because
they were only a billion. You're wrong. More people are wealthy today than ever in history. In 1960, only one American household out of 50 had a worth of $1 million. Last year, 2013, according to the government's own figures, one person out of nine in the United States lives in a household with a value of at least $1 million or more in worth. Not a house. Their family is worth at least $1 million, one out of nine. It has gotten five times better over the last 50 years.
You also have a situation in which in many of the urban cities, they're seeing poverty rates that are astronomical, and the wage gap in terms of wages across the board is basically stagnant. But at the same time,
because
you have many
have
people
skills for the modern
who
economy.
Are, in,
they
who
are
heavily
in
debt.
Time.
They're being contacted
is their only goal.
By collection agencies.
It's a breakdown they're of the
in,
educational
the
system.
Average credit card debt is over $15,000 on most credit cards between $5,000
and
$15,000.
Credit card is not a
people
necessity.
Are not
it's
able
a luxury
to meet all
of
their obligations
the
every
company.
Month. So
most
therefore,
of what people
you don't
purchase
have people,
on credit cards are
so,
not necessities.
So therefore,
they
you don't have the
items.
Average household growing in wealth in comparison to the people who are the very elite or the very wealthy in the country. That's not happening. And
it
I'm
is,
not exactly sure where all your numbers are coming from.
There are more billionaires
but
today
you need to
than
go
there
back
were 10
to
years ago in this country.
Some of the economic journals and find out where wages stand in this country.
Oh,
how,
violin and play.
How wages have not increased in like the past
that's because of the liberal
half century
fiscal policies. They keep killing business. They keep killing opportunity with what comes out of Washington. The reason the wages aren't going up is because business isn't expanding in this country. Welfare is expanding, not business.
Here's the thing,
and
though.
The reason why
the thing,
welfare is expanding is because you have
the reason why
you
welfare
have a
is expanding
where people
is because
do not
the government
have
is letting people get
to
on
go
the
out
goal.
And compete
Clinton cleaned
for jobs that require
role.
Them to have higher levels of education. The reason why they don't have those skills is because they came from a situation where
no,
they were
the reason why they don't have the skills
they were
is because
in
their
public school
suck.
System
their parents
that was
are
not
drug
adequate
addicts and criminals
to meet all
and
of
don't
their
have any social
needs in terms of
their
learning,
to
and they were not
children.
Able to advance
they can make
themselves.
Babies, but they can't
so
raise
therefore,
babies.
They had to go back to the government to try to rely on some type of government, to try to rely
you know,
on a government benefit.
If the government money wasn't there, they'd find something productive to do. Very few people starve. In lieu of
nine,
doing
I'm, look, I'm not
one,
saying people starve. What I'm saying is that what I'm saying is that the jobs that are available to them, they can't meet all of their obligations with that.
Hey, welcome back, Tracy and friends, WSOM 600 AM here, 347-945-5229. Call in and give us your opinion. We've got Philadelphia, we've got Jeffrey Green, we've got Blind Mike, not so Blind Mike, excuse me, we've got South Carolina, we've got 440, And we've got Eric on the line, and I promised Eric he would be coming back in. So, Eric, what was your opinion on what we were talking about when we went to break on wealth redistribution?
Now, we were talking about the gap inequality in, as far as income. Now, what gets me is this. I know a lot of people that work for major corporations like GM, Delphi, you know, steel mills that have worked there for like 15, 20 years. Could you imagine how they would look if they were to buy one share per week, companies to get paid, you know, people coming to pay every week, you'd have almost 1,000 shares of stock, at least.
Right, right. And I teach Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University class at my church. And Albert Einstein, I believe, said compound interest is the working man's best friend. And we don't understand what the smallest amount of money put away from the day you turn 18 and get your first job until you retire can amount to.
Yeah,
we really don't. We don't.
20 years in a meal, and I'm like, you mean you haven't bought one share of stock in that company, and you worked there for 20 years, getting paid $1,000 a week?
Right. And the thing is, we don't realize that it's not the. I was going to go there because we don't realize it's not the hundreds that kill you. It's the old adage of mind the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves. In the old financial peace course, there was a little graph there. One pack of cigarettes, age 16 to 70, works out to $11 million with interest. But, and you know, Starbucks, the same thing. You know, you're talking $11, $12 million with interest over a lifetime. And we don't think about that stuff. Go ahead, Philly. I told you you could go next.
This notion of the average person being able to get inside the same business networks as these people who are elite is basically a form of a panacea. I mean, that's not going to happen in every case. What needs to happen is we need to look at the corporate structure itself and say, do we have enough profit sharing with people who are in the middle and people who are in the bottom of this type of company? And basically, if we don't have that inside the company structure, then we need to start to change that, because the reason why these elites are able to accumulate all of this wealth is because they have these business networks. They're able to network between each other, and they keep the average people out. And what's starting to happen is these corporations are starting to exert their influence on the government, where the people who are the representatives of the government are supposed to represent the people. Now that's not the case. They're out to represent these corporations because they have all types of lobbyists. They're able to lobby the government.
Yeah.
They're able to pass laws. The people's voice is not being heard.
And unions don't do that.
Let me back you up on this, though, Philadelphia. Let me back up on this, though. There already is a profit-sharing vehicle in place. It's called go out every payday and buy so many shares of an exchange-traded fund that is part of that holds the Dow or that holds the NASDAQ or that holds the Russell 1000. Those profit-sharing means are already in place. The problem is the average American is not trained to give up his Starbucks or to give up his cigarettes or to give up his pizza on Saturday night and go buy that exchange-traded fund or that into that mutual fund.
And that's the
whole problem. That is the real problem with the wealth distribution.
Into mutual funds, or they're able to buy some share or stock in the company, are they able to break the glass ceiling to get themselves into the wealth category if they don't have those business networks that those same elites and senior management have?
And chances are they won't
be able to.
Is somebody that has $12 million when they turn 62 years old wealthy?
Yeah, but what? But
okay.
We have to look at this in a generalized view.
Yeah.
And when we look at it in a generalized view, if we look at the corporation in America today, are the people who are in the middle and people at the bottom, are they getting the same share of wealth in that corporation as people who are in senior management? That's
no.
not happening.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, let me just – we just got to put some statistics on the table here and stop all this whining about these theories that have no basis in fact. The 404 people, the wealthiest, this year, last year, 2013, a billion wasn't enough to get you on the list anymore. The new cut point was $1.3 billion. There were about 60 to 90 people who did not make it on that list. There are more billionaires today than there were ever in history. This disparity, big corporations have stock issuing programs where employees can buy their stock in their own company. They have 401ks. Many employers do savings matching and all to a certain degree. And it has been proven over and over and over and over and over and over again, Philadelphia, the people who take advantage of those, no matter what level of the company they are, whether they're a custodian or a vice president, end up better off at retirement than the people who do nothing. And your problem is you're trying to get the people who do nothing, learn nothing, improve themselves at no level during their entire life, are more interested in spending $400 a year for the expanded sports package on Dish Network or DirecTV and watching 14 football games a week. You want those people to end up in the same place with the people who live a life of moderation and a systematic savings program and discipline themselves to say that two-letter word that the poor cannot say to themselves, and that's the word no. Not today.
Right.
I can't afford that.
I firmly believe that 95%. Hold on, Mike. I firmly believe 95% of the poverty in the United States is self-inflicted.
Amen.
I believe that.
That's not completely the case. You do have people that are caught in cycles.
No, he said
of generational
95% Philadelphia.
And some of it is the fault of the systems that they're in. They're not able to get the skills that would allow them to get out of the situations that they're in. And it's not all
how many free government work
hold on, Mike. Philadelphia, let me ask you this. If down at your local community center in Philadelphia, somebody walked in there and said, listen, I'm going to teach the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University class, how many people would walk in the door and voluntarily take it, do you think?
I would think at this point with the economy and it that's in the state that it's in, I would think that you would have a large number of people who would
It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. I teach it every year. I teach it every year.
Yeah.
We promote it well throughout the community.
But I'm not sure.
I've tried different times. I've tried. Hold on, Philadelphia.
You're going to.
Hold it, Philly. I've tried Inner City Alliance, Ohio, for one thing. I promote it all over the place. And you get maybe one or two students every year when I teach it. People are not interested in learning how to get themselves out of poverty. The average American is not interested in it. It's just... it's something
well,
that's beyond our psyche.
Well, I don't think that's true, sir. I don't think that's true. I see people all the time who are caught in different types of working class jobs, and they're trying to find any means to get out of the situation that they're
in. Wait a minute, Philly.
They may have a situation where they have children in the
Philly,
public school system, and a lot of the public school systems are falling apart. Their children
hold
are
on,
not
Philly.
Being educated
hold
properly.
Hold on, Philly. Are they trying to make more money, or are they trying to learn how to get out of poverty? That's two entirely different subjects.
They're trying to learn how to get out of poverty. They're trying to educate their children so that their children don't have to live the same life that they're living. This is happening all the time in this country. And what happens is a lot of people are blind to it because they don't have a wide range of people that they actually deal with, and they don't see this on a, everyday basis. So therefore,
go ahead, Eric, you're in Warren. Go ahead, Eric, you're in Warren. Let Eric speak.
That's not the
case. Erickson Warren.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
You got to convince people that you have to know what to invest your money in. For example, you can't go out and buy a $200 pair of tennis shoes and think they're going to be worth something a year from now, because they're not. That's the problem in a lot of these communities today. They're investing their money in the wrong things.
But some of them do. I mean,
Most of them do,
and some of them don't. That's not everybody.
And we're
does
not
that.
Just and Philadelphia. You need to understand. We're not just picking on the inner city people. This is countrywide.
Yeah.
This is people making $100,000 a year. The average American retires on $1,500 a month. And you're talking from
and
inner city people,
people
who made $100,000 a year. And it's lack of financial education that's causing it.
Right, financial
it's
education
not,
needs to be taught across the board, whether someone's in the upper middle class or in the working class. You also have people who are upper middle class who are lawyers and doctors who don't manage their money properly either. So
that's exactly what
I
just
mean,
said.
So, I mean, that's true, you know, practically in every economic class.
Yeah,
but the problem today is you do
let,
have
hold
people.
Hold it. Let Eric go now. Let Eric talk.
My point is this. If I come into $50 million, I'm not going to run out and buy a $200 pair of shoes. I'll never spend that much money on a pair of shoes. That's just how I am. You know, I don't have that kind of priority. And I wish more people would.
And that's the problem here. We're not just picking on inner city people. I mean, you have a lot of people in this valley that make a lot of money in manufacturing jobs. And they're counting on a pension that's going to pay them about 25% of what they were earning, and they're not putting any money away. It's not just an inner city problem. It's an American problem, right, Mark?
Absolutely.
I mean, you see it in your practice a lot.
Well, you know what? It's opportunity is something that's kind of hard to quantify. I can tell you what doesn't work. Right now, we have the disparity between the rich and the poor in this country has never been greater. And the president who said he was going to end it has been in office now for 6 years. That tells me that approach doesn't work. What works is making sure that opportunity is available for everybody across the board, allow small businesses to thrive, allow them to hire people, and allow people to go out and try to make a better life.
But
do just the opposite.
But what standard do we use when we're saying the gap between rich and poor has never been greater? Because if you look at the amenities that the poor people have in this country, it's never been closer than what the rich people have.
Hello?
They had to go to a break.
Oh. Well, you know, I don't know whether the amenities between the rich and the poor is exactly as equal as you think it is. I mean, we happen to be an industrialized nation. And certainly if you're in an industrialized nation in a free economy, you're in the first world, you don't expect to see extreme hunger like you would see in a third world country that wasn't modernized. But the thing is that you do have deep poverty in this country. You do have people who send their children hungry, who go to bed hungry. These things are happening. And as one of the callers said, it's because we're starting to see this disparity between rich and poor that's growing. And so these problems are occurring. And it's, you know, if we are a modern people and we want to see the country improve, we have to realize that this type of economic chasm is enlarging. We have to do something about it.
The problem isn't regulation. It's what they're regulating. They need to refocus on what they're regulating, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the reasons why the financial markets collapsed is because the government wasn't involved in the types of regulation they needed to be involved in. The financial markets were using instruments to help them to invest that were not proven, and as a result, the government wasn't able to try to take these things out of the marketplace, and it caused the financial markets to collapse. So we can't.
And the instruments they were using were poor subprime mortgage paper, because the government came in and told banks, you better start lending to poor people no matter what their credit scores are so they can buy homes.
But that was not but that was not the only reason. They were using different types of derivatives that were they were using to package debt, and these were basically just mathematical equations that someone at a business school had thought up, and they were unproven. They were being used across the board, and the government didn't have the types of regulation to say you can't use these things in financial markets if they're unproven.
Yeah, because I remember back in that time when it was going on, I would go to the bank just to make a withdrawal or a deposit, and they would ask me, are you considering buying a new house? We have some great mortgage packages. Want to talk to one of our specialists? And I'm like, no thanks. This was like around 2006, 2007. I'm sitting there thinking, why are you guys trying to get me to pick out a mortgage so bad, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, basically the bank works off like a fractionalized reserve banking where, you know, if they have a certain amount of money in the bank, they'll loan it all out and only keep a certain reserve in the vault. So, you know, their whole thing is to make money off loans, interest off loans. That's how banks make their money.
Right.
And so they're going to loan everything out and hope that it comes back to them in the interest payments.
They were trying to sell me houses that I knew I wasn't qualified for.
Right. Well, that was a result of the Community Reinvestment Act that Clinton passed, where they weren't checking credit scores and whether people were, you know, employment records to find out if people qualified for mortgages. Now, that was a government policy, but that was not the only thing that collapsed the economy, you know. It was the way the debt was being packaged. And the brokers were using all these algorithms that were coming out of business schools, and these algorithms had never been proven to work or not, and you didn't have government to act as a regulator to go in and say you can't use this stuff in financial markets.
But if it had never been proven and nobody knew it existed and it was brand new, how would the government even have time to have a regulation? Do you understand? Regulations come after years of some problem, and then they say, well, we got to fix this. Well, if nobody knew about this, it came out of business schools, it was all new, even if the government wanted to do something, they wouldn't know that it even existed. You know,
the government would know that it,
Philadelphia.
The government
and
would know that
sign
it existed
beach,
if it was being used in the free market.
Philadelphia, the no littering sign on the beach is because that's the spot where people litter. That's why they put up the sign after a while. The rest of the beach doesn't have those signs because that's not where the litter was being thrown. And that's how regulations are. When they know there's a problem, they have a regulation finally.
Right. And so, therefore, but with this situation, these types of derivatives were being used for years on end since 2000. They had been using these algorithms
and Bernie
to help
Madoff
package
debt. Bernie Madoff was regarded as one of the greatest fund managers in history for over 20 years. He was a consultant to the SEC, and it took 22 years to capture what he was doing. And it wasn't until the downturn in the market
that's just
that
one
he finally
case
got caught.
Of a, but that's just one case of an investment broker who relied on his reputation to help to keep the SEC and his clients at bay. That's
but don't
just
you think Merrill Lynch relies upon its representation
I'm saying
when it's putting out a product?
These derivatives were being used across the board. They were using these algorithms across the board in almost every brokerage house on Wall Street. They were using these things. And the government wasn't able to come in and say, you can't use this stuff. This stuff is unproven. It's coming out of a business school. And we don't know what this is going to do to the financial markets. And as a result, it collapsed the whole economy.
Yeah, because Bernie Madoff said in a jailhouse interview, he knew what he was doing was illegal. He just didn't care.
Yeah, well, basically, Bernie Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme for, you know, most of his career, and he had a reputation where, you know, he basically lived off his reputation for all of those years, and that's how he was able to get away with it. But, I mean, that's just one example. There was a situation here where it was a broker here who was doing something similar. He wasn't as big as Madoff, but these types of things happen all the time because brokers have special accounts that their clients put money in. If you're not regulating that account, then the broker can take money out of that account and they can put it in their pocket and they can move money around. So therefore, if you're an investor, you have to know exactly what types of things you're investing in and how much money you have in these brokerage accounts.
Yeah,
evidently, people weren't able to regulate what was going on with Madoff. That's the way he was able to get away with the schemes he was pulling.
Yeah, he was basically robbing Peter to pay Paul for 20 years.
Right, yeah.
And it finally caught up to him.
Yeah.
Eventually, Peter wanted his money back.
Yeah.
Well,
that's how a Ponzi scheme works. I mean, you take people who first come in at the bottom, and you pay the people off at the top, and you just move the money back and forth, and that's what he was doing. For years, he did that.
And probably figured he'd be dead and gone by the time they caught what he was doing.
Right. I mean, it was so traumatic on his family. I think one of his sons committed suicide.
Yeah, his oldest son
committed
suicide.
He found out about it. Yeah.
Because he realized that he was getting played, too.
Right. But, I mean, we're in a situation now where some of the public sector economy is coming apart. A lot of the pension funds that people who are city workers rely on, the pension funds are being dried up of money. They don't have money. The public schools, they're coming back to the state government saying we don't have enough money to open the schools. So there is a definite problem in the economy. I mean, and it's because we have this corporate interest where they are able to influence the people who are the legislators to a degree where they're not paying their fair share of taxes back into the economy to help to support these public sector institutions. You know, they got all types of shell games where they can move profits offshore, and then they're not paying taxes back into the country. And we're basically moving more into a corporatocracy where, you know, the people's voice is not being heard.
Yeah, they must have
Now, certainly, you know, America's a great country, but it's people who know what's going on, it's their job to speak up and say, look, even though it's good, it can be greater. If you do certain things that need to be done, people who have some awareness of what's going on, they need to say, you know, these things need to be done. That's why, you know, I don't agree with all of the tactics of the Occupy movement, but what they're talking about is definitely true. I mean, you know, we have to make sure that the corporations don't end up with, you know, with all of the wealth, and then the people are more like a form of an indentured servant to the corporation. We have to make sure that doesn't completely happen.
As long as people can still buy stocks in those companies, that will never happen. It's when they become private companies and they have all that power. But as long as as long as you can have stock voting and proxy fights and everything else, and as long as you can have a board of directors who have to be voted on by the stockholders, and as long as you, even if you have one share of stock, continue to get your quarterly updates and everything else, which is mandated by federal law, none of that can happen. That's your fear.
That cannot happen. But what can happen is what is currently happening is that we can see these balloon payments for people who are higher up.
I think they forgot about us.
I think they lost us, yeah.
Yeah, because they're back on the radio.
They are? Okay. Call number and say, hey. Let me see. Let me get Sticks' phone number. Give Sticks a call on his cell and say, hey, you're not turning on the chat room.
Yeah.
Let me see. Where the heck do I do that? Over here. Let me call Stick. He's aware of the problem. He thinks the telephone line dropped to the chat room here. Maybe we should all just dial back in again and see what happens.
Well, the show is going to end in like 5 minutes, I think.
Well, come on, Philadelphia. You're not going to quit on me now. We still have 5 more minutes to argue, you and me. I'm going to call back in and see what happens.
Okay.
The country, and we all this stuff, and we got to give the land back to these people, and we got to give the land back to those people. It's a crock. History's done. History's that's here and there. We're Americans. Quit dividing us. Teach people how to invest. Let Social Security, even if it's just 5% of your Social Security payment, go into self-directed funds. If the government wants to approve index funds, that's fine. And start to dollar average, your savings. And that's how we save this country. Not going to this guy over here and saying, you made too much, give me 50% of it. That's how, that doesn't work. I'm better now.
You're better now. Mark feels better. Hey, I want to apologize. For some reason, our telephone line dropped at Blog Talk, so we're back again. I don't know if anybody picked up on that conversation, but Mark was on a rant about dollar cost averaging and how the average guy in this country. And I'll tell you, it works. My son, I do rant real well. You do. My son was making $9 an hour, single guy. And he was putting away 20% of his wages. And within 4 or 5 years, he had 40 grand.
Yeah.
So, so we can't sit here and say you can't do it. It's just that we don't have we just don't have the wherewithal anymore as a society. We don't have that saver's mentality that our grandparents had.
No.
I mean, my grandmother washed Ziploc bags. And dried them.
Yep.
And we don't do that anymore.
Yep.
So what do you say, Mike? Okay. South Carolina.
Are we up? Just turn
well,
off.
It says I'm up here. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah. I'm here.
There we go.
Okay, Eric's here. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. All right. We had some technical difficulty with Blog Talk, or our telephone line or something died.
I think you're the technical difficulty, Sticks.
No. Tracy lost everything the other day.
Did she?
We were really flying blind the other day.
But I'll give you, you've got some absolution here. That's okay.
So go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I was going to say what you were saying about back in my grandparents' generation, they grew everything in the garden. I mean, the only thing they bought from the grocery store was poultry and meat. Everything else they grew in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, 440.
You know what? Just like you were saying before, nobody wants to sacrifice anything. When I was working, I had a 401k. I had stock shares with the company. All the guys I worked with all went out to lunch every day. And some were drinking, whatever. All right, I stayed behind. All right, and I saved all that money, and I looked at certain stock, and this is not hard to do. If I can do it, anybody can do it. You don't have to be smart. I looked at the most popular things people were buying. Oh, I think I'll buy that stock. I take a look at that, and that's what I did. It's not rocket science. Beat them at their own game.
Well,
that's
yeah,
all
and that's
doing.
The thing. And that's
you know,
the
like
thing.
Chipotle,
I mean,
Chipotle got spun off by McDonald's. Didn't want it. Guess what?
Go ahead.
Look what they're doing.
Yeah.
Look what they're doing. Yeah.
Right.
So it's there to be made, and you don't have to be that smart to do it. And you know what? Everybody that I hear on this radio station, they're not stupid. They could do the same thing and not
mm-hmm.
lift
it
a finger.
Take self-discipline. Well, you all have a good day, and we're going to be signing off and come back tomorrow, and you just have a wonderful day.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Four, four, oh, I hear you.
Well,
yeah,
it was nice listening to y'all, hearing y'all talk, and I will.
I saw some of your posts, so I could tell they kind of pissed you off today.
Yeah, he muted me through the whole entire show.
Are you serious? He did.
I thought
you were just
yes.
left, Diva.
No, he had me muted through the whole entire show because Mark Mangi blew a gasket and can't control his emotions. That guy has serious problems. I saw it when I was in the studio. He gets upset very, very easily. If the sound of my voice makes you upset, something I'm saying makes you that ticked off.
Well, he's muted. I've been
me.
Muted
the
whole show
it's
before,
you.
Too. It's pissed me off when I get muted like that, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, especially when my background noise, and I know it's not me. I'm getting accused of background, and I can be in the house.
That I could deal with. Me, when she mutes me because I'm going back and forth with someone, but Tracy, I've never been muted an entire show. I've never been muted for 2.5 hours. I've sat here and listened to this entire show, and he just simply refused to bring me back in. Even when he said, oh, we have on the line Eric, South Carolina, Nasa Blonde Mike 440, he refused to even say Diva's still on the line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they probably took it that way. You just got to know who you're dealing with, Diva. Know what it is, man. Folks disagree.
Disagree to disagree. I mean, don't be ignorant about it. That's how you lose callers. That's how you lose your fan base. You can't afford.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it is not Tracy today, but I've been muted.
Right.
And she called me stupid and muted me before. So, and I know she pissed off Blind Mike one day. I wasn't on there that day, but she really pissed him off one day.
Oh, well, what day was that? I must have not have been on.
I don't know. He was pissed. Mike, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Tracy pissed him off one day real bad. I mean,
yeah.
they got a tendency to mute people when
you come with an opposing opinion. I mean, I can't. I'm sorry. I don't toe lines sometimes. I don't toe party lines. Sometimes I'm going to disagree.
Well, she was yelling and screaming at me for something that I didn't even say. It was someone else and something I did, and I just backed her down. I just said, this is uncalled for. You know, I do have a professional reputation to maintain. My voice is fairly distinct. I have lots of people who recognize me by my voice. I do other work in the media, and it's like, you don't accuse me of saying stuff like that, and you don't talk to me that way on the air. That's not how you talk to professionals.
Well, it's not how you talk to people, period.
Yeah,
or how you treat people, period.
Yeah, as long as you're not swearing, it shouldn't be a big deal what you say if you disagree.
Hey, you know how that goes.
Well, I
know one thing. These folks talk about Chipotle. It's always a line around the corner at Chipotle around here. They can have that, though. I done had enough, Mexican.
Mm-hmm. That ain't even real authentic Mexican.
Yeah, so that's everywhere
that's
I see.
Like,
the one here in Warren is the same way. Line stretched around the corner.
That's because y'all Chipotles are new. That's the same as when I came to Youngstown, I noticed that a Chipotle in Boardman, and there was a line out the door, and I'm like, really? And it was much smaller. The one here in Columbus, we have several, and they're much larger buildings. So
yeah, you know where Super Kmart is on 46 and Niles?
Yeah.
They just built one out there, and that's why it's packed all day long.
That's the only one they got?
Yep. I dropped my daughter off at work, and she always wanted to get lunch there before she went to work for a little part-time job, and she almost damn near late every day.
Man, we got like three Chipotles within a 10-mile radius.
But there seems
wow.
to be more. There are hundreds of brands of food besides Mexican. Like, it's just, I'm Mexican now. I mean, it's so many different Mexican restaurants. I don't know what the big deal is. It's not that good of food to me.
Yes,
it's just rice
it is.
And beans.
I'm sorry. My first time
really.
Having a Mexican Puerto Rican dish homemade, I was in 12th grade, and I had a Puerto Rican friend who invited me to her house, and I stayed for dinner, and oh, my gosh. I was like, oh, man. It was so delicious.
Yeah, I attended a Christmas party in Miami, in Coral Gables, the south end of Miami, which was predominantly a Cuban refugee place at that point. And the Christmas party and the food. They did the pit with the pig in it and everything else, and they did the paella, you know, the rice with all the different fishes and everything else in it, and holy smokes, the food was phenomenal. The girl who was supposed to be my date, I ignored her and just ate.
That's the perfect date.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Yeah.
No
also,
talking,
was,
just eating.
Also, the party was also a coming-out party for her because she was that age. And her father was some wealthy Cuban businessman who fled to the United States when Castro came to power, and they were always worried that the Cuban revolutionaries would kidnap her to raise money so they could buy guns and stuff because they were doing military maneuvers in the Everglades in Florida. They were practicing for the invasion. And
how old were you? Because that sounded like a quinceañera.
I was 20 or 21, and she was a little older, though. She was like 17 or so. In Cuba, they do it different than they do in other parts, I guess. And but here's the funny part.
Right,
because they were
they
so
usually have their quinceañeras between ages of 13, 17, and then if they miss
yeah.
it, they can have one at 21 or whatever.
Yeah, well, what happened, sweetheart, was they were so paranoid that she was going to be kidnapped. First of all, the whole night, her grandmother sat between us with these big knitting needles, knitting, keeping one eye on me. Like if I touched her, I was going to be speared. I got the message. And every time we got up to dance or do anything, we were always in the middle of five guys with guns, her bodyguard,
oh, wow.
because they were so worried. And it was like, holy smokes, you know, I hope if they start shooting, they're saving me too, not just her.
Right.
Maybe I'm expendable.
Diva, what's up with these black women in these restaurants with these funky attitudes? I mean, really.
What do you mean?
I mean, I just get tired of it. Like, it's just, it's typical. Like, it's just one female at this place. I'm over here getting a smoothie. Terrible attitude. I've seen on numerous occasions. She don't look you in your face, no eye contact, no personality, nothing. funky attitude every time you come in there. I just get, man, I'm tired of that, man. I'm tired of it. Like,
say something about it.
Yeah,
like, I don't really feel like getting into no cussing match with her, so I'm just trying
to.
No,
you don't. Just like, just be like, you know what? It's okay to smile or just make a joke or something.
Yeah.
She might be having a bad day. Her life might be crappy and fucking a crappy job. It's not right to take it on other people, but again, some people just don't know how to handle their emotions.
Let me tell you something. I've been through hell and high water, and I still treated people. When I was a produce manager, I was miserable because I had come from making, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to $12 to $13 an hour. And I still was, you know, would treat people with respect and talk to people with some sense. I mean, I don't get this. And whatever she thinks she's stressing about is probably real menial. I mean,
you don't know that unless you talk to her.
I said probably. You're right, I didn't. But I'm just saying. I mean, I've seen women get upset because they lost their keys or something. You know, just dumb stuff like that.
But losing keys was not the real issue. That just was the camel that broke the back.
She's just angry, and it's just typical with a lot of sisters, a lot of them. Typical, angry, black. I'm just serious. I mean, people don't want to hear it. That's the truth. Angry, always mad about
it. I get the same thing when I come across black men. They just always seem like they have a chip on their shoulder.
Well, a lot of them, and you're right, a lot of them want to act like they're thugs all the time, want to act like they're tough. But
no, it's not about them acting like thugs, because I come across really nice guys. They just always seems to have a chip on their shoulder. I went on a date with one guy, and he was mad, got upset because what he ordered wasn't cooked right or something, and he just had a bad, really bad attitude about it. And that's him.
That's one guy that's just not easy going.
I'm saying is just like how you come across a lot of bad attitude black females, I come across a lot of bad attitude black males.
I blame the man.
I don't even think it's close when you come to black women compared to black men. Black men.
Okay.
It's not even close.
That's your experience, and this is my
experience. That's not just my experience. Look, you can take a poll. 90% of black men will say, 95% of them will say the same thing I'm saying.
And you'll,
black
you
women
can take
got bad attitudes.
Black women, and they'll say the same thing. 95 to 98% will say that they come across
for the sake of argument, you can't just make something up. Not even true.
It's the management's fault. They tolerate that behavior in their place of business. And if you find out who the manager is, you'll see the manager's the same darn way. If you go to a Chick-fil-A here in South Carolina, I don't care what color the person is, whether they're green or black or brown or yellow or what, you get the most friendliest service with somebody who gives you a smile and actually makes you feel like they're glad you spent your money there.
Well, that's Chick-fil-A in Alabama, everywhere. Every Chick-fil-A
I've
ever been
in. Management controls
that. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It's like
yeah.
This morning somebody was ragging on all the kids in the public school system because he was in a place and the power went out and the kids on the cash registers didn't know how to make change without being told by the machine what the change should be. And I'm going like, you know, if management is upset by that, it only takes 10 minutes to train one or two of your lead cashiers how to do that. And then every time you hire a new cashier, you make sure they know how to make change. It's part of your training program.
That's why when I go out to eat to a steakhouse, I order my steak well done. I do not like to get in a conversation with cooks because people are dirty.
Yeah.
You don't tell them what they're going to do to your food when they take it back. And my wife does that all the time. I'm like, would you please wait until they serve my food before you complain?
My aunt one time, back in the late 50s, early 60s, I had an aunt, my grandmother's sister, who was a waitress. And she was walking out of the kitchen, and she dropped the guy's steak on the floor. She picked it up off the floor, put it on the plate, and put the plate up on top of the piano, which was like 12 feet away from the guy's table, went into the kitchen and got him a new meal and brought it out. He gave this is like 1960. He gave my aunt a $20 tip. And probably the whole meal was $7 for the day, you know. And it was because he said, you made my meal. By leaving that dirty steak there where I could see what you did, I would have always wondered, you just brought me back the same steak out of the kitchen. It's stuff like that you're talking about.
Exactly.
They should leave your food on the table and say, excuse me, let me put this over here. I'll be back with the new food. That's how.
But my problem with fast food workers, primarily females, black, is that you're on the clock, so it doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah.
To treat it doesn't hurt you if I ask for a napkin.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt you if I ask for a straw. I just.
Right. You're here anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's about
like,
my dining
on the clock.
Experience. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Like I remember one lady came in the fast food restaurant. It was pouring down, raining real bad.
Yeah.
I came out from around the register, grabbed her food. Come on, let's walk to the car.
Yeah.
Walked to the car. She swore by me every time she came in there.
Yeah.
She would always tell the manager, "This guy here, just because I helped her get her food to the car, because she had a lot of food."
Yeah.
To me, it's just, I don't know. It,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I know Diva thinks different, but that's just typical, especially as a man. A lot of times we have to be more aggressive to try to start relationships and go, man, it's hell trying to talk. That's why a lot of brothers are shy and afraid to talk to women, because they get their heads bit off. Or women just mean. They got to get out of their own way sometimes. Women are just mean, and then they walk. They actually like the guy. But they gotta act so like they can't stand him. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All part of the game. And see, that's the problem. People who play games, you don't need to be around people to play games. Life's too difficult to be with somebody who wants to play games with you.
You got women that'll tell you they don't like you or they don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Just and then they'll get upset. And then later on down the line they'll tell you, "Well, I wanted you to talk to me. I'm like, well, why did you do that? Why were you acting so spank?
Yeah.
Why did you really want to talk to me? Why did you, I mean, that doesn't make sense. I mean, don't you think that's kind of backwards?
Well,
that's what I'm talking about.
The way we handle it, the way us older white guys handle that kind of stuff is, once you reach about 40 years old in the white community, we're pretty much immune to all that kind of crap, and we come right out and say, "Are you sending me a mixed message? Or is this what you really want? Because if this is what you really want, you got it. I'm out the door. Goodbye." And we'll give them exactly what they said they want. We'll give it to them. "Well, I didn't mean..." Well, then stop sending me mixed messages. And we stop playing the mixed message game. You tell me what you want. If I can give it, you got it. If you're going
to
play this gamesmanship, I'm out the door.
But you know what? With women, what really kind of makes it funny to me, they have these attitudes, and then they act angry.
Yeah.
But you have to be emotionally supportive. You have to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just the emotional part of it. And I'm like, this doesn't make any logical sense.
Well, that's why
I got in an argument about something on Facebook one time with my girl, and she wanted me to delete something. So, you know, we got in an argument or whatever. So I went to work, forgot about it, came back. "Did you do it?" "Oh, well, I forgot. Let me go do it." That was an argument. I said, "Well, I forgot, but I'm doing it now." Went and deleted it. We argued 2 days after that, just because I forgot. And I was like, I said, logically, does this make sense? I mean, I actually have physically went and did what it is that you said you wanted done. Why are we still sitting here 2 days later still going back and forth about it?
And then
emotion.
Okay. And here's how you handle that, young brother. Let me tell you how to handle women who do that kind of crap. You tell her you've got exactly 30 seconds to shut your mouth on this topic, or I'll put the damn thing back up there, and it will stay on twice as long as it did this time. And if you open up your mouth about it again, I'll remove it, but if you open up your mouth again, it'll stay on twice as long as that. And the day will come when I'll just leave it up there, and it'll be just easier to replace you. That's how you got to talk to them.
Here's what gets me.
Don't play games.
Here's what gets me. "What do you want for dinner tonight, honey?" "I want lasagna." "Why do you want lasagna?" "Because it tastes good and I've been eating it for the past 20 years since we met."
Yeah, exactly. Why are you – here's what you got to learn to do with those kind of people. You got to answer the question with – you got to answer their question with a question. You know, when they say, "What do you want for dinner tonight?" You just ask them, "Why are you asking? You have something in mind." So you're telling me whatever I want, I can have. And you nail down the rule of the conversation. Then you say, "Great, because I'm, okay, great, I want lasagna." "Well, why do you want that?" "Excuse me, that's not what you said. You already agreed that whatever I wanted, I was getting. I'm getting lasagna. We already agreed on this." And you
But
just,
I mean,
you
they're
start,
weird. They're weird creatures, Mike.
You start them like adults. You start training them to be like an adult. This
well,
is
hold
crazy
on
crap.
That's weird. That's weird, though, because, see, in our society, they always say women grow up mature faster.
Brain-wise, in development in the frontal cortex, that's why when they do this kind of behavior, it's not because of lack of brain development. It is because of personal choice. They choose to be this way. You as a guy, until you're 28 years old, you're so driven by what's below your navel that you ain't even thinking clearly until you're 28. They've proven that the frontal cortex for higher reasoning and all that doesn't even develop in men until you're 28 years old. Women, it's pretty much developed by 18. If a woman still behaves this way, it is a choice with her.
Yeah, let's paint the walls in the living room a certain color. You paint, you do all that prep work, get everything done. Well, I don't really look right. I think that other color I was going to pick the first time is probably better. It's like, are you kidding me? Do you know how much work I had to do to get this stuff ready?
Yeah.
But see, women, they won't tell you they don't want something, like with the whole analogy about going to get something to eat. If you try to keep them happy and accommodate them, now you're a weak, indecisive man. If you make a decision, you're selfish.
Yeah.
But the selfish, usually it's best to be selfish because usually that's the guy, that's the jerk that they dated for 10 years.
Yeah.
That they hate.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm to the point now where I'm like, you know what, you're right. I'm selfish. I'm a selfish prick, and I'm going to keep on being that way.
Yep, exactly.
But they'll love you for it, and they'll love you for it.
I'm glad you gave me this opportunity, my dear, because I'm going to prove to you that I'm selfish. Thank you for the opportunity to even prove it to you again. We're having lasagna. Shut up. That's how selfish and unreasonable. Oh, you're so terrible. I'm so terrible, I'm going to show you how terrible I am. See that door? I'm walking out that door, and I'm going to talk to you for the rest of the day. That's how terrible
exactly.
I am.
Diva, you still there? Diva's a good example because Diva will just say something contrarian just to be contrarian a lot. A lot of arguments. Hey, come on now. You tell me black women aren't well known for their bad attitudes. Everybody knows that.
But I've had white women come right out and tell me the reason, you know, after the argument was over or whatever, 2 days later they told me the reason they said it because they knew, because they wanted to see if they could get a rise out of me.
Women test men, though. They try to test you and think that's strength if you check them, then you're strong.
Yeah.
She'll start an argument, say something to you real disrespectful, and want you to check her.
Yeah.
She said, I need somebody to put me in my place. Like, I'm a man. I don't play like that. I don't go there with you, like, trying to get somebody to check me and put me in my place. But women do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like if I take the car to get new tires put on, it's like, why do you need new tires? It's like, because they wear out. What's wrong with you? Why are you asking me that question, you know?
Why do you need new tires? Because I knew it would piss you off, so I decided to just go get them today.
Yeah, I drove down a street full of nails on purpose, you know?
Yeah. Why do I need new tires, you know? Other than the loss that I had to because of the fact that Lincoln's head wasn't covered anymore when I stuck the penny in the tread. remember all that logic with the penny? You had to cover Lincoln's head? You know, I go, let's see. Other than the law, and like I thought my insurance was high enough, didn't want any accidents, you know?
Yeah.
Why
are
you tires?
Yeah, and you and your friends cruising around town had nothing to do with it either, you know?
Yeah. I would tell, you know, my answer is, exactly. You know, and it's like, well, here's why I needed new tires, because you are so precious and so valuable to me. Your safety came ahead of all else. And it was, of course, the peer pressure that said I needed a car so I could end up with a woman like you that I would have to drive around safely. you just give him some stupid, sarcastic answer. This is why I hate Dr. John Gray, the guy who wrote Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, because that whole book is, no matter what your day was like, you're supposed to come home and, like, totally, totally meet her needs. Let her talk all this psycho babble to you about, and then Ruth said this and da da da, and you know what a bitch is, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she wore the same blouse, and she knew that I was going to wear my yellow blouse, and she wore the same blouse, and you're going to hear all this petty, petty, childish, juvenile psycho babble. But you see, if you're a really enlightened man, you're supposed to hear this. And I'm going like, Dr. John Gray, you just ain't getting enough nookie. That's why you had to write a butt-kissing book like this. It doesn't matter that you work high iron and you just saw somebody get killed today. You're supposed to shake that off and walk through the door and hear about how the cleaners ruined her blouse.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're not a sensitive 1990s man or whenever the heck you wrote that stupid book.
It's funny, though. Like, if you're on a laptop and you're trying to look at stuff for business or doing something, doing research on stuff, you got to sit there and, I'm talking about Monday through Friday, 7 days a week, you got to sit there and rub feet and
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I did that for 2 hours. It's 8 o'clock. Let me go over here and do this for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't do that till she's asleep.
Right. Right.
By the time she's asleep, you got to go to work, so you got to go to sleep. So you ain't got but 15, 20 minutes to yourself a day.
Yeah.
And women don't understand, if you want a healthy relationship, you got to give a man time to himself.
Yeah.
Or his
yeah.
friends.
That's why a lot of guys on their way home stop for a beer. It's the time to decompress. So when they walk through the door, they got a buzz on and like, go ahead, do your thing now. I'm ready for you.
I think our society's out of balance, and I think that's really destroying the country. And I think it even affects our economics. I think
sure,
our whole economic system, women are never told no on just about anything they want. They are never told no. So told no, then somehow you're a weak man or you're – no, well, wait a minute. What about selfishness? Does selfishness come into the play with women at all? Are women selfish in any way? Like – eventually, I just think, you know, we've kind of taken that too far, and I think it's destroying this whole culture. You know, women get whatever they want. Like, a woman can manipulate a guy and get
– sure.
They complain about their salary, but 80% of the stores are for women.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that tell you?
Yeah. Now, there's just some part of the whole thing that's just out of whack, and it's very problematic the way it is. You know, it really is. I agree with you on that.
Think about it. If you walk in Walmart, they got the teenage girl section. They got the young girl section. Then they got the overweight woman section. Then they got you just got the boys. So you got the boys and men. That's it.
Yeah.
When it comes to women, the whole center of the store is for women. First, they got the purse section. Then they got the women's jewelry section. Then they got the women's. Everything is for women. We just don't pay attention to it.
Even the stuff
for men are still for women.
In our society, that whole
cosmetic section
just explained, we have lost the ability to just suck it up. You don't need to tell everybody, and women are the worst at this, you don't need to tell everything that went wrong all day to somebody that really wasn't there, and it isn't going to change it. You know, this, I needed to vent. You needed to vent? Well, you know, then here. Go put the rug out on the line and beat it with a stick. That'll help you vent, you know, and that'll also be cleaning the rug, you know. It shows you how mundane and boring our lives have become, where stupid stuff becomes memorable enough that 2 days later you're still talking about it. Trust me, in the old days of the pioneer, man, life was so darn hard. You weren't griping about what went wrong 2 days ago when you're in the middle of a drought and you got 10, 15 head of cattle dying every day from no water. But you weren't
thinking about burning the coffee. Think about it this way, though, also. Like, you didn't have banks, so people had to literally save every penny. If you wanted to buy a piece of land for $4,000, you had to save every penny.
Yeah.
And you're only making a dime an hour. We're talking about in the 18, early 19. These folks ain't making nothing.
Yeah.
They're making $4 a week, $3 a week, and you're talking about you want a $4,000 piece of land?
Yeah.
You folks, that's what I'm saying. It's a different level, and they had a higher level of testosterone. This has been proven.
Yeah,
yeah. You look at these shows like Real Housewives of Atlanta. I'm like, what? And it's wrong with you people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's funny because the immigrants came with the already attitude that they were going to work 6 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day, and it wasn't how much they got paid per hour. It's how much could they earn in a month, and for how many years. And those were the ones who in the they lived in apartments, you know, all through, you know, in the inner city and stuff, the immigrant population. And they were the ones who then were able to help their children, which would have been like my parents' generation. They were able to help their children with a down payment on the first person who owns a home in the family. And those people then lived the same way. People who fought in World War II and everything else and went through the Depression lived the same way as their parents did, the immigrants, and they were the ones that helped their kids go to college, help their kids start businesses and everything else. Then along comes my generation, the baby boomers, and we can't get out of our own way. And the last half of the baby boomers
are the flower children,
expecting their parents to support them.
Those are the flower children. Those are the hippies.
Yeah. But that's another thing, too, that, you know, about violence and stuff. We're the generation that was raised on Westerns and World War II movies And we're the ones who protested for peace in the street in the late 60s and early 70s. Go figure. So apparently that had nothing to do with being violent. We're the ones raised with toy guns and everything else, and we're the ones that were the ones pushing the peace movement. It's the wussification of our country. It's the wussification of our women. It's the wussification of our men. And then these women are the ones raising the little boys to be even wussier than they are.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, that's why I think that's the downfall. I'm sorry, man, but young boys being raised by single moms, the chances of them coming out not being a wuss are very slim.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I was raised by a single mom, but my mom had to hold down so many jobs, I was pretty much raised in the streets, in the project.
Okay.
And believe me, my mother worked so hard. If you got a heart and care about your mother and you were raised to respect your mother and you were raised to care about other people, when my mother dragged herself through the door at 11 o'clock at night, we used to have to meet her at the bus, the last bus that ran, and that was her second job, and she was coming home at 11 o'clock at night. She's been gone since 7 o'clock in the morning. The last thing I was going to, and Johnny hit me, and Bobby took my marbles, and the last thing, that was the last thing that woman was going to be burdened with. I remember 11 and 12 years old coming home from school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the house was cold in the winter. It meant we ran out of oil. I remember at 12 years old scraping together loose change, taking bottles back to the store for the nickel deposit, 2 cent deposits, getting together 50 cents, borrowing a 5-gallon gas can from a neighbor, walking 2.5 miles down a hill to get range oil, which was like kerosene, because we had oil furnaces, and then walking back up that hill, and it was now 6 o'clock at night, and it's freezing bitter cold, and borrowing a pipe wrench from a neighbor, and I'm 12 years old, and I'm blind, and I'm pouring this fuel in the tank so my mother didn't have to come home to a cold house after two jobs.
That's what I was going to say, Mike. I'll guarantee you, your mom came home at 11 o'clock at night, and everything was done. Dishes clean, house was warm, everything else.
And on the night she came home early enough, you know, the potatoes were peeled, and they were sitting there alongside the stove ready to go, or they were in the pan ready to turn the heat on to start boiling the potatoes and stuff. The kitchen floor, the rugs were shaked out. The laundry was done and hung on the clothesline out back in the project. The kitchen floor was washed once a week. It was waxed with Johnson's Glow Coat. I used to wax the floors for my mother, too. I kind of didn't mind doing that. And the lady next door had four daughters, and she actually said to my mother one time, she said, "That's where I went wrong. I had daughters. I should have had sons. Your two boys are constantly working." You know, yeah, we had our list of chores. We had to get them done. If we didn't get them done, there was hell to pay.
And here's how screwed up it is nowadays, though. Your mom would probably be thrown in jail for child neglect.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For no heat in the house.
I remember when I was 12 years old, that was a hard year, because that was the year we ran out of oil many times, but I then knew how to bleed a furnace and everything. But I remember one time I came home from school, and I tripped when I walked in the living room door, because there was something on the floor, and I didn't see what it was, obviously, and I tripped and fell down. When I went to get up, I realized that was my mother. I thought my mother had died. I called the neighbor and everything. My mother passed out. We had so little food. She hadn't eaten in 3 days. She was giving all the food to my brother.
Wow. Yeah.
The panic of thinking at 12 years old, your mother just died. Because I couldn't see what was going on, you know. And it was stuff like that, but it made us a very tight family unit. My mother used to sit down with her paycheck, and in those days, the factory, she had several jobs, waitressing and in a factory. The factory had benefits, so she stayed in the factory. That was her daytime job. And they paid you in cash at the end of the shift. Of course, waitresses always got paid in cash. And I remember sitting there at the end of the week with my mother and the envelopes and all, and she taught me how to budget. You know, there was an envelope for the electric bill. There was an envelope for the telephone, for the rent, you know, for food, for this, you know, and how she divided up her money. And you know what was really interesting? That box with the envelopes in it was a little tin box. It was up on top of the refrigerator. And you know what? There was one of those in every house in the project just about. That's how people did their bookkeeping and stuff. Nobody had checking accounts. Everything was done in cash in those days. And nobody stole it from anybody. That box was up there. To think to go into that box and take money out of it, like when my mother put that box on top of the refrigerator, that box no longer existed in my universe. the thing, and the kids today, they'll go steal from you. Kids today go into their parents' purse and wallets and everything and take money out and everything else. I'd have my mother would have killed me if I ever did anything like that to her.
Yeah, I know a woman. I know a woman down the street from me. She's got two sons, and they don't help her do anything.
Right.
She spends her day off. She's got to go out and work in the yard.
Yeah.
And these kids, they sit on the porch all day. They got their Air Jordans on. And I'm just like, I want to grab those two boys and just shake them. Like, get your butt in that tool shed. Get that lawnmower out and cut that grass for her.
I mean, we were in the
project. If I say that.
Yeah. And one lady who was a single mom, had three kids. She was a nurse. She lived a couple houses from us. She had one of those old-fashioned push-reel lawnmowers with the reel on it that you push. And she used to just maintain a little bit of grass out in front of her apartment in the project, which wasn't a heck of a lot. It was like maybe 200 square feet of grass. And when we saw her using it, we'd all borrow it from her. And we'd all go do ours, too. Because the shame would be my mother would come home, and again, she'd see Lois's grass was cut, she'd see Helen's grass was cut, and our grass wouldn't be cut, and we didn't have all that much, you know, out in front of the house. The big fields and stuff was maintained by the housing authority, but the little bits in front of your houses and stuff you were supposed to maintain, and we did.
You can actually
look, take what you got, if you, even though you're in a small, cheap, you know, house in a certain neighborhood. You starch your clothes up, iron them, keep them starched up and look nice and clean. People would never know that you're struggling because you can still look, you know, you can look nice and keep yourself up. And a lot of times I got in fights when I was younger because of that, because we didn't look like
trash.
We didn't look like we had our haircuts. My mom fixed hair, so obviously I got my hair cut every, at least twice a week.
Yeah.
I always looked good. I always had, even though my shoes were maybe $20, they were clean. They were white. She would wash them, even though I hated she did it.
Yep.
She would wash my shoes. She would wash everything I had and put it in the laundry, get it starched up. She would spend money because the laundry was 40 cents for a shirt.
Yep.
So we looked nice.
Yeah, in the 50s, the big craze was the white buckskin shoes that Pat Boone used to wear. So all the kids in grammar school had the white buckskin shoes. And the fact that they were dirty, even though we were little kids and stuff, you know, you scuff them, you step on them. No, before we went to school every day, we had to get out the bottle of Johnson Liquid White Shoe Polish and make them white again because it didn't reflect good on your family. They didn't let us wear jeans to school. The school rule where I went to school was the only pants you could wear were pants that you could put a crease in. If you couldn't put a crease in it, you couldn't wear it to school. And some of the guys would try to starch their jeans and put creases in them and stuff. But at 8 years old, I was ironing, and I was doing all that at 8 years old. Blind or not, I had to do it. My mother did not have time. She was working three jobs.
Well, I think people mature at the level of what you require from them.
Exactly. And the trash was taken out. None of this nonsense where it piled up until it was overflowing and you had to tell them. It was part of my daily checklist. If the trash was near the top of the bucket, take it out, put a new paper bag in the bucket, and get rid of the trash, you know?
When I was growing up to push a lawnmower, I was big enough to mow the lawn. That was the rule in my house.
Yep. Yeah. And
we used to have kids knock on our door back in the day, and we used to get people knock on our door all the time.
Yeah.
This is before, you know, I was real young.
Mm-hmm.
Older kids would come knocking on the door, 14, 15, and they would cut grass. I have never seen. You don't see pushing a lawnmower with a tank anymore.
You don't see 14, 15-year-old kids knocking on doors wanting to shovel snow and let grass. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we used to shovel snow all the time. When we were done digging us out, we started knocking on doors of people that we saw, and there were some people that, you know, worked second shift and slept during the day and stuff, and they, you know, give you a quarter, 50 cents to shovel them out, which was quite a bit of money in the day, and you know, we didn't evaluate stuff like how close the wage it was. It was thank you for the money.
I had a 16-year-old kid tell me this past winter, when you get done with yours, you can come do mine. I'm like, are you serious?
You know, kids, nowadays, I know grown men that won't do that.
Right.
I know grown men that don't have jobs that won't go
And he got some money, and I told him to go ahead and get a go get a lawnmower.
Yeah.
I said, man, go get your lawnmower and start cutting yards on the side, at least because he know a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't, won't do it. Won't do it. But calls and tells me he's depressed all the time. He can't get a job.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. And you know, with the blue, with the Scotch brand blue painter's tape that you could just put on and make a nice clean edge, hell, even I can paint or paint a door and not get paint on anything.
Yeah.
You know?
I had it's like every day I had a guy ask me for a dollar outside of the store so he can buy a pack of cigarettes. I figured, why don't you go inside and ask the store owner, hey, I'll help you stock some shelves. He'll probably give you a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 I now there's just a certain level of dignity and you got to go for it. Anyway, I'm looking at the clock here. I got to move on. I got to go be a capitalist pig so that I have something to.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm
going to
be calling myself that.
All right. Well, let me go be a employee for some company.
There you go. There you go. Well, I am an employee. I'm the lowest paid employee in two of my own corporations. What I take out each week to live on is less than what I pay some of my people. And I own the company.
We got to go redistribute our wealth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got to go redistribute my wealth. Yeah, I got to go redistribute my wealth. I got to give some to the government. I got to give some to the state. I got to give some to the people. You know, I got to give some to the accountant, the tax man, the lawyers. Yep.
I actually worked with a manager at a Winn-Dixie when I was a produce manager, and he was the beef manager. And he would always come to work excited and say, hey, man, we got to do our part to pay taxes. He actually thought he was coming to work to pay taxes to help the country. And I told him, I said, one day, I said, you know every penny you come to work is just to pay the interest on the Fed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I've always had a goal to make so much money that I would legally be forced to pay $1 million in taxes some year. And one of these years, coming up soon, I hope to be able to make that claim that I paid $1 million in taxes even after all the loopholes and everything. I'll be excited because you know what that leaves me with? It leaves me with more than most people would have earned in a lifetime for that year, you know? So it is what it is, you know? You can focus your energy about all the injustice, or you could focus your energy on making it better for you.
Well, you got to pay your fair share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pay my fair share. I pay my fair share. Yep. Come on by the house. I'll give you some of it.
I don't know. Fair share, that's crazy.
I know,
fair share. Yeah.
Define fair share. Yeah. Well, of course, then you got a president who goes on TV and says, come on, when you made enough money, you've made enough. Oh, really? And what number is that?
Yeah, that guy never worked a 40-hour week in his life.
Yeah, and when he was a community organizer, that was all funded by grants and charitable donations from people who probably had less than he has right now.
Yeah, he's been living off taxpayers his whole life.
I know. But the good news is he's not Italian, because then he'd be my problem. He's black. He's your problem. You own him. We get an Italian president, a Catholic Italian president. Uh-oh, then I'm in trouble, because then I got to own his bad upbringing. So take care. Have a great day.
All right, fellas.
All right.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye, brother.
All right, see you.